Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. I can see honorable Hunsinger here and other members. A very warm welcome to this meeting from me to all of you. I hope we will participate fruitfully and take this meeting to its logical conclusion. You are warmly welcomed. Two apologies. It's actually not an apology. We are delighted to have Ms. Nolu Chungu with us, although we know that she's traveling to a funeral in Eastern Cape. I think I should note that as the highest form of commitment. Thank you for being with us despite the bereavement preparations you have. We will deal with the letter from the Office of the Minister once it is here. Honorable members, we closed our meeting not in so good note last week. I think we should start from item number one, which says deliberations on ERT bill, consideration of the updated list. Am I right, Valerie?
Yes, Chair, the further updates on the A-list for the ERT bill.
Who is updating us?
Chair, that will be the State Law Advisor, Advocate Haricharan.
Advocate Haricharan, are you with us?
Good morning, Chairperson, and good morning to the members.
Good morning. Are you well, Advocate?
I'm well, Chairperson, and yourself?
I am well. Are you ready to go, Advocate?
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, it's Ms. Harrison. Chairperson, if I may please just begin, I would like to apologize profusely to the members and to yourself, the Chairperson, for the delay during last week's meeting. I do apologize, it was not deliberate, and please accept my sincere apologies in that regard. Subsequent to that meeting, we've had a meeting with the Parliamentary Law Advisor and the departmental officials, and we've agreed and discussed the further amendments to the A-list, which will be discussed today.
Advocate, you can forge ahead.
Thank you, Chairperson. So with regards to the further amended A-list, we've proposed grammatical and textual amendments to the further updated A-list. The clauses of the bill with proposed amendments include, amongst others, the following. These are the clauses which we wish to bring to the members' attention. Clause 4 on page 2 of the updated A-list. And regarding clause 4, on page 2 of the A-list, point 1 of clause 4, it is proposed that subsection 11.1, that in subsection 11.1, the word consolidated be replaced with the word amalgamated. For the intention of this particular clause to be clear, Further to that, in clause 4, also on page 2 of the A-list, in clause 4, we have proposed the rewording of paragraph 11.1b for paragraph B to flow from the contents of paragraph A. Please, Chairperson, please may the members take into account that the wording of paragraph 11.1b has been revised and has been revised. If I may read out the revised changes to the paragraph B, if that is in order, Chair.
Yes, that is in order. You may go ahead.
Yes. Sorry, Chairperson, we have consulted the department. There are subsequent changes to the paragraph B as it appears in the document at the moment. The wording is different, but we have an updated version, which I'll read into the meeting now. Paragraph B will read, in clause 4, paragraph B, if the minister has determined that one or more of the regulators referred to in paragraph A, in brackets, must be amalgamated, comma, the department must produce a report, comma, after conducting a review of their performance and capabilities, comma, to incorporate these regulators in 3 years from the effective date and from time to time, comma, thereafter. Those proposed amendments to clause 4, Chairperson. If you may please proceed to page 9 of the further updated A list.
Maybe let me just say to the members at this point, members, if there is anything that you want clarified or you have a view on it, please don't hesitate to raise your hand whilst we are moving. You can go ahead. Oh, there we are. Two hands. From the honorable members of this portfolio committee, in the name of Honorable Lisa Umangu Ujambas, alandelwe ngumhlekazi uBaba uHunsinga, in that order.
Thank you. Excuse me. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to you and to the colleagues and everybody in the meeting. Yes, you caught me by surprise when you said we should raise when we've got concern. But anyway, my concern is the term amalgamate. I don't know if that is the intention or what do we mean when we say, thank you very much, in order are amalgamated into the regulator. Is this an amalgamation we are dealing with, or these existing regulators will cease to exist and then we'll have a new regulator, or is an incorporation? I want that clarity if possible, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mang. Baba uMhlekazi uHunsinga ngena ba.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, my learned colleague has covered me on the question. I was had also had a concern about the use of the concept amalgamate and whether we've got some legal reference about the choice of the word and what other alternatives were considered, but then in particular the implications of the use of the word amalgamate. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable Hunsinga, Mayor Richard, back to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the reason why we've suggested the word amalgamated due to the department has mentioned the safe in the economic regulator. And this ties in with the phase in approach to the regulator when I say to stage.
Talk closer to the mic, Mayor Charin, we losing you. Hello. I hope I'm audible. We have lost you completely.
Am I more audible now, Chair?
Yeah, you are. Thank you very much.
Yes, Chairperson. Regarding the use of the word amalgamated, Chairperson, this ties in with the department has mentioned that there is a phased-in approach of the transport economic regulator, and the use of the word amalgamated means at a later stage these regulators will be incorporated into the or fall under the transport economic regulator at a later stage. And therefore, that word amalgamated has been used. This ties in with the phased-in approach of the transport economic regulator. And this is why this word amalgamated has been suggested. Thank you, Chairperson.
Amalgamated. I hear you also saying integrated, but let me allow my learned friends to come back in that order.
Chair, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear anything after the advocate said the department said something. From there on, I couldn't hear what she said. Through you, Chair, if that could be repeated, maybe if she could just stay in one place, it would help us. Thank you, Chair.
Before we come to you, Honorable Hansinger, let me give everybody a benefit of hearing what the advocate was saying. Will then come to you. Please, may I return?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to repeat what was mentioned regarding the word amalgamated. The word amalgamated was used in clause four in order, because the department has previously mentioned the phased-in approach of the transport economic regulator. And this word amalgamated ties in with that phased-in approach. When at a later stage, entities such as the National Public Transport Regulator could possibly be amalgamated into the Transport Economics Regulator. And it's for this reason that the word amalgamated was used to tie in with the phased-in approach of the regulator.
There you are. Baba Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I assume that following this process, we would have public participation input. Can you please confirm my assumption, firstly? And secondly, I'm not convinced that amalgamate is fine. Obviously, you know, there's a lot of synonyms. I'm thinking of incorporate, merge, blend, coalesce and all sorts of, but I think it would be fine if we then define amalgamate, since every time there's reference to amalgamate, the advocate then says and qualifies that one should understand amalgamate within the context of phasing in. So I think it would be suffice then to extend a definition of amalgamate so that there's no doubt how it should be understood within the context of this particular piece of legislation. Could you please confirm that indeed we will have public participation input following this phase? Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Honorable Hunsinger, Obaba Umangu.
Thank you very much. Well, I'm also not convinced with the explanation of the advocate. Amalgamate, in my understanding, not in a legal understanding, is when you bring different entities, institutions, which you want to bring in on an equal basis. In other words, there should be no other person dominating another one. You are trying to bring uniformity. That is when you amalgamate. One can make a simple reference to the processes we had after 94 when we are amalgamating the erstwhile, for instance, the defense forces of the homeland. You had to bring a process where nobody feels they are inferior to another one when they come into a new defense force. Now, in this case, my understanding, subject to correction, we are establishing a totally new entity. We are going to dissolve, discontinue, or whatever the right word is, those entities, as the minister will determine when that happens. If I'm corrected, therefore can never be amalgamation, unless indeed I missed it somewhere that it is amalgamation. Then if it's amalgamation, we should be saying, let's bring all the CEOs, let's bring all the boards and all these things and see that we bring everybody together. However, as I said, my question earlier was not entirely answered, hence I had to make this explanation of what my understanding is. Thank you, Chairperson.
As we move on, Ubaba Unsinga did suggest a number of words, among themselves was incorporate. Would we feel comfortable with that word, so that in our engagement we also provide a bit of direction to this, Baba Umanu?
Chair, yes, certainly. As I had said in my question, that is this an amalgamation or incorporation? So I concur with my colleague. Incorporation, in my view, if my explanation is acceptable, would be a preferred terminology. Thank you, Chair.
Mondis, kwesakwisigodi lapho ukhona namhlanje, Mondis. And then followed by Honorable Pigmay.
Mangete.
Yebo, Mondis.
Mangete, I was listening to the explanation from the advocate.
Mm-hmm.
According to his explanation, to her explanation, she says she used the amalgamated because of the department. So now I'm trying to check from her his understanding on this amalgamation. Does that fit in this thing? Thank you very much, Chair.
I think there is a suggestion on the table already, Mondise, that we should use incorporate. I would want to hear your view about that.
No, Chair, I think the incorporate is the correct, actually the correct word.
Thank you very much. Sinehle isandla. Mondise, uma sophendulekile mfowethu. Ngiyabonga baba. Geichte Piet May.
Thank you, Chairperson. I agree incorporate is a better word than amalgamate. Thank you very much.
Mayor Richardson.
Chairperson, in line with the suggestion by the members, it's fine if the word incorporation is used instead of.
Thank you very much. Can we?
Sorry, Chairperson. Maybe just inquire if the Parliamentary Law Advisor has any comments in this regard. Terminology, please, Chairperson.
Okay, is the Parliamentary Law Advisor with us here?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the word amalgamated was decided upon because it is different to a merger, where the entities still retain some of their assets and some of their identity. So the word, we chose amalgamated specifically because what amalgamated means in this context is that there'll be a combination of or combining of these agencies and regulators to form a new regulator. And that is why we went with the word amalgamated. Incorporated refers to a type of company or a legal entity where the ownership belongs to shareholders which have no responsibilities. So from just in terms of legal definitions, amalgamated was more suited with to this particular situation. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, I can hear that the lawyers are saying let's convince the committee to live with amalgamated, and they are trying to explain it. Mhlobo wam, honorable members who proposed, are we can we settle with the explanation?
Chairperson, I beg to differ. I stand on my suggestion that incorporation is more suitable, simply on the basis of incorporation referring to a combination into one new entity, one new substance, whereas amalgamation means that there's a diversity of content and function and role. And it is then packaged to form a new entity, which is not the case. The economic regulator would be the entity, and the identity would be lost of the integrated former entity. So there's a loss of a particular entity, a sacrifice of function and role, which would then be converted into a new entity, which in my view is not amalgamation, but it is integration. So I would stand with that. Thank you, Chair.
It is integration. So you're considering integration instead of incorporation.
To me, integration and incorporation has the same status, Chairperson. So I would say incorporation, and the process of incorporation is integrated. So to me, incorporating is the reference to businesses and entities, which in my view would be more appropriate than amalgamate, because in amalgamate, there's a formation of a third component out of, say, two components, whereas nothing would be left of the prior component, since it would be totally incorporated into the economic regulator, which comes in existence once this bill is passed.
Okay. Baba Manu?
I tend to agree with my colleague. And I think, as I said earlier, maybe we were a bit caught by surprise here. I'm certainly not for amalgamation. In my understanding, that is not legal. I am certainly suggesting that maybe through you, Chairperson, if it doesn't derail you, we come back to confirmation of the terminology, but our strong proposition is that amalgamation should be done away with. However, we might look for the words, as my colleague was saying, incorporation, whatever those other words are, and we can find a common ground in terms of that. That is my suggestion. As earlier on, I think the legal advisor made a view or a point that it happens where there are companies or private companies, I think that was the terminology used, if I'm not misquoting her. And I think these companies, if I'm correct, they are established in terms of their own acts, but they've also got a leaning on the Companies Act. In terms of their regulation or their governance issues. So I am for the doing away of amalgamation. The explanation till now doesn't convince me. unless there's really some other compelling one. Thank you, Chair.
Ubaba ukhetha amabala wakamondisi.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, if I understand the way the amalgamation, it's the combination of different companies. So now I'm trying to check if you are talking about one regulation. Now they are saying we have to talk about the merger, because if the advocate can explain. What does that mean? Or either they are taking this amalgamation because they have been used by other countries. Thank you very much, Chair President.
Advocate Almanel, you want to say something?
Hi, morning, Chair. Is something I've just sent a message also to the parliamentary legal advisor that we just need clarity from either LAWSA, because there's specific legal definitions that are linked to these words, Chair. Mm-hmm. If we look at amalgamation, it is when two organizations join together to form one large organization. So, Chair, mm-hmm. it really is, if it means that, let's use the example, when we get to the phase where cross-border CBRT is incorporated or amalgamated or absorbed, if you want to use that for a different word, into the economic regulator, will that entity as it, in its entirety lose its current nature and functions and operations? Some people also refer to it as a merger. So, Chair, there's various words that can describe the combining of two entities, but it's whether we need to find the correct legal terminology for this, because these are entities, they are legal entities, so it has to be within that frame of mind that it is legal entities. But we need to be clear that it's not just the, if you say they are being brought in, the term you use, must be either linked to the entire entity or is it just now the regulation aspect? So, Chair, again, cross-border road transport agency, if we look at some of the work that they're doing with that bus, for example, that looks at the license plate numbers to identify whether or not these people have paid their permits and so forth, will that then also go to the economic regulator? So I think if we have a better understanding of exactly how these other bodies are going to be added into the economic regulator from the department, it'll help us to find the correct word. But Chair, for the ports regulator, as the department indicated, the ports regulator becomes the nucleus for the economic regulator. So that one, in true sense and form, is an amalgamation because the ports regulator will no longer exist after that. And that is also the explanation they gave us, which is that they're going to start off with that board and they're going to start off and bring in that staff. If we look at the rest of this bill, there is the reference, members will recall in the discussion that whatever benefits those employees had, whether it's under the public service pension fund or however, that gets transferred through to the economic regulator. So if the department feels that these listed or other bodies or regulators get brought in the same way as the ports regulator in their entirety, that they then no longer will exist after the addition under the economic regulator, then Chair, I think amalgamation will be the better word to use. But the parliamentary legal advisors must give their advice based on what the current legal definitions and interpretation of those definitions are when it comes to these companies, Chair.
Thank you very much. I think this boils down to the request by Honorable Mangi. Let's leave this a bit and do some work in terms of how you said LAWSA, Law Society of South Africa. Am I correct, Advocate?
Chair, it's a legal publication that sometimes has, I just don't have access to it from my site. The legal team should have access to it. It's either on LAWSA or it is on their online platforms, LexisNexis or Jutta, where you can draw the legal definitions as well as explanations or links to court cases where those words would have been interpreted so that there's certainty from a legal side for the use thereof in the legislation.
I think let's do that. We'll then come back to this and just complete it properly. If members will allow me to step off this issue for a moment and follow the route suggested by both by Honorable Mang in the main and confirmed by advocate. Mayor Richard, can we in the meantime proceed with the other matters? We'll come back to this matter
yes,
later.
Yes, Chairperson. Yes, Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, should I continue with the proposed amendment to clause 411B?
111B, we are done with.
Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. May I refer the members to page 9 of the A list?
Page 9 of the A list, yes.
Page 9 of the A list, point number 13 of schedule 1. Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, page 9 of the A list, point 13 of Schedule 1, which provides for the proposed amendment to Section 72(1) of the National Courts Act, 2005, Act Number 12-2005. The bill currently only provides a subsection 1 of Section 72 of the National Courts Act 2005 is being amended. The proposed amendment to subsection 1 reads as follows. Subsection 1 in brackets, the authority must prepare a proposed price control for approval by the regulator in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act, 2020. Because of the proposed amendments to subsection 1, there are other changes to be made in subsections 2, and subsection 4 of section 72 of the National Courts Act, as well as the heading of section 72 and the proposed insertion of subsection 5 into section 72 of the National Courts Act 2005. Members are currently referred to page 9 of the A-list, point 12. Of Schedule 1, which proposed the substitution to yes, the members are kindly referred to page 9, point 12 of Schedule 1, which proposed the substitution to the heading of Section 72 of the National Courts Act 2005 to be in inverted commas, authorities, price control, with the word price control underlined. I'm going to refer the members to page 9 of the A list, point number 14 of Schedule 1, which proposes amendment of subsections 72(2) and 4 to substitute the word authority with the word regulator. Thereafter, on the top of page 10 of the updated A list, page 10 of the updated A list, there is the proposed addition of subsection 5 into section 72 of the National Courts Act to state, in brackets, subsection 5, for the purposes of this section, comma, the meaning of price control in inverted commas has the meaning ascribed to it in the Economic Regulation of Transport Act, comma, 2020. Yes, these are for the clarity of interpretation purposes, Chairperson. Those are the proposed changes to Section 72 of the National Ports Act. May I have leave to proceed with the next item, Chairperson?
I don't know where Chair is. My hand has been up, Chair. When you are able to give me an opportunity.
Chair, your mic is muted.
Valerie, my mic is... I thought I was hearing Honorable Mangu chairing, and I wondered where I was. But yeah, my mic is doing the wonders. I'm sorry, Honorable Mangu, you are trying to raise to me. I wondered. okay, members, let me hear Honorable Mangu.
Chair, thank you. I really need to apologize. There is something that I missed under clause 4.1b before I just maybe even forget it. That is on the, I don't know, it's the one on the right where I think it's the A list, the further updated A list. If I may, Chair, may I go ahead? It takes you a little bit back, but I thought it's important, Chair.
Take me a little bit back if it's important. My patience is all that.
Thank you very much, Chair. Advocate Nell, if you could help us then, maybe clause one, clause under clause 4.1b. Yeah, the 1B says the minister, that is where we were. Go further down, please, advocate. Okay, it says the department must produce a report after conducting a review of performance and capabilities to incorporate regulators in 3 years from the effective date and from time to time. Now, that word we were arguing about there, that confusion comes up again, but we had already resolved how we are going to take that one. Because the same team is using the word interchangeably or another word on the same clause. But the point I wanted to raise, Chair, and it is a clarity-seeking question. What is this report and what is the relevance of this 3 years? From the effective date of what? That is where the clarity seeking question is. And I think I got taken away by the terminology, the word amalgamate, hence I missed it. And I apologize again, Chair, for taking you back.
Thank you very much, Advocate.
We're still in the meeting.
Advocate?
Chair, do you need a response from the state law advisor on this one?
Yes, I do.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Chairperson. If you may please ask the department for their comments in this regard, in regards to the proposed report, Chairperson.
Okay. Let me hasten, although I thought that we are now on the A list. Who's here on from the department side for this bill, ERT? Departamento of Transport.
Chair, maybe while they're still thinking, I think the question you were saying, you said it on a lighter note, but I think you are right. If we're in an A list, whose process is it? I think don't just leave it, Chair. You were raising a fundamental issue. Let's hear, Chair, because are we still opening it up to the department? Because we would have thought all those processes engaging the department would have been done. I thought you were raising a fundamental issue, but you just pushed it aside because of this humility of yours, Chair, at times. That is problematic. Thank you, Chair.
Mayor, Chairman, I was trying to accommodate your view.
Yes, Chairperson.
Can we deal with it?
Yes, Chairperson.
Mm-hmm.
Chairperson, the paragraph B has been reworded, it's just a rewording of the paragraph so that it flows from the content of paragraph 11.1a. And it refers to once these other regulations put in paragraph A must be amalgamated, we have that draft wording. The department must produce a report after conducting a review of the performance and capabilities. This would be just sort of a measure of, if I can use a term, quality control of the other regulators' performance and capabilities during the process of amalgamation into the economic regulator. So a department will conduct this report to include all this information as to the regulators' performance and capabilities. And they've just given an incorporate regulators in 3 years from the effective date and from time to time and after. As you mentioned, this forms part of the phase in the approach of the economic regulator, and it's definitely period of 3 years from the effective date of that in order to complete the process. Thank you.
Honorable Mann.
Yeah, Chair, thank you once more. And advocate keeps on moving away from the mic, but I don't think I've been responded to.
Mm-hmm.
Unless I missed something, maybe somebody can put it more simpler to me. It says from the date of, I think she said this report is from the date of incorporation, amalgamation, whatever. But it doesn't say so in what I've just read, unless I've missed it, you know. And it says must produce a report after conducting a review of performance and capabilities to incorporate regulations in 3 years from the effective date and from time to time. I assume the effective date is when that entity, CBRT as an example, has now been that component of regulation. For me, it's just very hazy to me, Chairperson, but I don't intend to stop or to delay the committee, but it's just too vague. I'm really not clear what this clause is saying. And however, if my colleagues and everybody else is fully on board, understands, I'm more than willing to step down on this matter. It's really not about me only yet. Thank you, Chair.
Mayor Karen, can you clarify that?
Chairperson, if you may please request that the Parliamentary Law Advisor, if there's any additional comments in this regard, please, Chairperson, on the Parliamentary Law Advisor.
The Parliamentary Legal Advisor must also raise her hand and come in. I will allow her all the time when she wants to come in. Parliamentary Legal Advisor.
Chairperson, thank you. I must just say that for some reason, I cannot raise my hand on this particular, it just doesn't allow me that option. I can't seem to do it. So, but when I do want to contribute, or if I have anything to add, I will alert Valerie and she can then alert you, if that's okay. But insofar as the word amalgamate goes, you know, with regards to legal definitions, context, the context is always important. And having regard to the context and what we are trying to achieve here in this particular clause, we felt that the word amalgamated was best suited, having regard to the fact that we were going to join those entities to form a new entity. Now, I hear that the members may not be entirely satisfied with the word and the explanation. But like I said, we had regard to the context and what it is, have regard to what we are trying to achieve. And in that light, we looked at this word and we felt that this word was best placed in this particular situation here.
What is your name again, ma'am?
Siloshni Gangan.
Mega Gangan. Meloshni Gangan. That's not the matter we are addressing, Meloshni. That matter has been settled by us agreeing that you and me, Haricharan, you will go online and consult the interpretation in terms of the LOSA and any other institution that may actually be able to help us in terms of the correct interpretation when it comes to amalgamation or incorporated or integrated. That matter was closed at that note, and what we are expecting from the two of you is at a later stage come back and say, in terms of LOSA, this is seems to be the right wording for this situation. Nevertheless, let me just check. I hope you still follow that, and you get me clear now, Mega Kanjin.
Yes, Chair. We will revert on that score. Thank you, Chair.
Please, Advocate Alma Nell Egan Enkom. Let us hear what say Ino.
Thank you, Chair. I think just on my understanding of the reference to the question that Mr. Mansour asked, the review that has to be done and from the effective date, that would be the effective date is the reference from when the economic regulator starts its work. This is, I'm assuming that the department believes that after 3 years, they should be able to then move from phase one to the next phase, which is why they've just added here that before we do, I'm just going to move up a little bit, before we do add any of these entities or other entities based on the new proposed 11.1A, before they do that, the regulator that we are establishing in terms of a bill that starts with the ports regulator has to be a review of the economic regulator's performance and their abilities or capabilities, or whether or not they have sufficient staff, and whether or not they've been successful in the first 3 years at least as well, to see whether or not they will be able to at that 3 year point then incorporate, for example, the cross-border guys. So, Chair, that is I think it's for members here to see, it's just that they do propose a review must be done before that incorporation or amalgamation, however, whatever legal word they're going to choose at the end of the day. The question really is here for members, would 3 years be effective or sufficient? Should we go on a 5-year cycle that we normally do for our planning? Do members believe that after the first 3 years or in increments of 3 years, the entity should be sufficiently capacitated and have the requisite skills in order to take on new functions? I think the 3-year time period is really for members then to come in and say, yes, we think it's enough. No, maybe 5 years. Maybe we think the department can do it faster. But just to clarify, the effective date will be the effective date of this bill coming into operation and day one from when the economic regulator starts its work. So I hope that assists the members' question. Chair, thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate Almanel, for assisting us. May Harichiren, State Law Advisor. Can we now continue?
Yes, Chairperson, may we continue with the next question? Chairperson, we were previously discussing on page 9 of the A-list the proposed amendments there to section 72 of the National Ports Act. Is it necessary for me to go over those proposed changes again, Chairperson?
Let's deal with all the changes so that the Peace Portfolio Committee knows exactly.
Yes. I will go over all of them again, Chairperson. Thank you.
You're talking about the changes that were done after we were done as the committee dealing with this bill?
Yes, Chairperson.
Yeah.
But I'll start again. Thank you, Chairperson. Once again, kindly refer the members to page 9 of the A list, point number 13 of Schedule 1. Which provides for the proposed amendments to Section 72(1) of the National Ports Act 2005, Act Number 12 of 2005. The bill only provides for Subsection 1 of Section 72 of the National Ports Act 2005 to be amended. And the proposed amendment to Subsection 1 reads as follows, in bracket Subsection 1, the authority must prepare a proposed price control for approval by the regulator in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act, 2020. Because of the proposed amendments to Subsection 1, there are other changes to be made to Subsections 2 and 4 of the National Ports Act, as well as the heading of Section 72 and the proposed insertion of Subsection 5 into Section 72 of the National Ports Act 2005. The members that refer to page 9 of the A-list, point 12, option 1, which proposes the substitution to the heading of Section 72 of the National Ports Act 2005. The Inverse Commerce Authority's price control with the word price control underlined. May I need to proceed with the next amendment to proposed amendment to Section 72, Chairperson?
Yes, ma'am. I am looking thoroughly at the screen here, and my people will come as and when they want to do something or say something. Let's continue.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
We kindly refer to page 9 of the A list, point number 14 on Schedule 1, which proposes the amendment of subsection 72.2 and subsection 72.2 and subsection 4 of the National Ports Act to substitute the word authority with the word regulator. And then on the top of page 10 of the updated A list, there's the proposed addition of subsection 5 into section 72 of the National Ports Act to state, inverted commas, subsection 5, for the purposes of this section, comma, the meaning of price control has a meaning ascribed to it in the Economic Regulation of Transport Act, comma, 2020. Those are the proposed amendments to Section 72 of the National Ports Act. May I proceed? There are two questions on page 11 of the A list. There is an inclusion of new points 19 of Schedule 1, which arrives on page 38 and 921, after minister mentioned between said shall in square jacket and in bold. And then further amendment is on page 11 of the A list at point 20 of Schedule 1 to provide. On page 11 of the A list on 11 of the A list at point 20. At point 20 of Schedule 1 to provide on page 38 and 922 to omit shall and to substitute shall under that. And those are the proposed amendments, Chairperson. Thank you.
You're done, Mayor Sharon?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson.
You are not leaving anything outside.
Chairperson, there are grammatical changes and textual amendments to the A list, including punctuation and comma. I'll just discuss the major proposed amendments this morning.
You will discuss them with who?
There are grammatical amendments and textual amendments to the A list. These are the main amendments that we should get to the presentation.
Is that your view that they are small, we don't need to know about them?
Yes, there's a grammatical and punctuation amendments in the industry.
Okay, there is a question that comes here, and Valerie?
Hey, we need to have a complete record of all those grammatical errors for our parliamentary record, please, if the State Law Advisor can mention that in the committee, please.
Isn't it what I'm trying to say, Valerie?
Yes, Chair, and I'm supporting you on that. Thank you, Chair.
Mayor Jared.
Yes. Can we
get this small grammatical issues or comma or full stop, can we quickly deal with them? I humbly so request.
There's several grammatical changes, Chair. I will go to them as requested.
Okay, on page one of the updated A list, point number six. On page one of the updated A list, point number six, to include the word road after the word after, to abbreviate road transport. Let's include a further word from the bill. On page two, item one in clause four, to remove the S from subsection to indicate a singular subsection. On page two of the A list, point one in clause four, sorry, on page 2, point 1 in clause 4, in subsection 11.1A.5, after the word other, include a semicolon and the word and. In clause 4, as we discussed, to include the word amalgamated. On page 3 of the A list, in clause 4, in subsection 2A, to just for subsection 2A, the words subsection B1, so B1 has been changed to subsection 1B to create the citation there, to remove the word A and to replace it with the, and to correct the typesetting, to put the word within the prescribed period next to the word gazette. On page 4, item number 3 of clause 47, the underlining of the letters A, B, C, and D have been removed from the updated A list. On page 5, clause 47.4, after the word contemplated, to remove the word to. On page 6 of the updated A list, item, point number 1 of clause 50, to include a full stop at the end of the sentence. On page 6, point number 1 of clause 3, to include a full stop at the end of the sentence as well. On page 7, item number 1 of clause 64, after the word connection word, to delete the word an, A-N, and after the word obstruction of, in inverted commas, to delete the word an. On page 7, item point number 3 of schedule 1, to insert a comma and the word or before the word prescribed, and to underline the word or the word. So the word all prescribed in terms of the Economic Regulation Transport Act 2020 all will be underlined. On page 8, point number 4 of schedule 1, it means to read as follows. On the facility, on page 8, point number 4, schedule 1 is amended as follows. On page 36, from lines 26 to 28, to underline the following words, any complaint against the authority must be lodged with the regulator in the manner directed under section 33 or prescribed in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020.
On page 8, to insert a new point, number 5 of Schedule 1, it's inserted and provides as follows. To on page 36, 931 to omit the number 2 in brackets. On page 8, point number 6 of Schedule 1 is amended to read as follows. On page 36, from lines 32 to 33, underline the following words, or prescribed in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. Point six. On page 8, point number 7 of Schedule 1 to be amended to read as follows. On page 36, from lines 40 to 46, to omit subsection 2 and to substitute the following subsection. Substitution and a given conclusion in terms of this section must by the authority all the way through to the word to the agreement, all of which is underlined, subsection A and B. Include underlining. Was the change to point number 7. On page 36, point number 8, on page 8, page 36, from lines 48 to 50, to underline subsection 2A. Point number 9, on page 8, of the ALS, on page 36, from lines 52 to 55, and on page 37. Underline subsection 6, 7, and 8. On page 9 of the updated A list, point number 10, on page 37, from lines 12 to 21, to underline subsection 6A and 6B. On number 11, on page 9, on page 37, from lines 24 to 26, to underline subsection 6. Point 12 on page 9. Point 12 on page 9. On page 37, after line 26, insert the following paragraph. Open bracket, subsection 9, section 72 of the National Report Act, 2005. Is hereby amended by the substitution of the heading for the following heading. Open bracket, authorities price control. Point number 13 on page 37, sublines 29 to 35, to omit subsection 1 and substitute the following subsection. Subsection 1, open brackets, the authority must prepare a proposed price control for approval by the regulator in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. All those words to be underlined. On page 37, after line 35, to insert the following paragraph. Subsection 11, Section 72 of the National Health Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsections 2 and 4 of the following subsections, respectively. Subsection 2, the regulator underlying must, prior to any substantial origination of a tariff, consult with the National Court Consultative Committee. Subsection 4, notwithstanding the provisions of this section, the regulator may enter into an agreement with a licensed operator or party to an agreement for a port user or for the variation of the tariff contemplated in subsection 1. Subsection 12, Section 72 of the National Ports Act 2005, hereby amended by the addition of the following subsection. Subsection 5, for the purposes of the section, press control has a meaning assigned to it in the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020, with all those words to be underlined. On page 37, from line 3840 to underline the following words, the Transport Economics Regulator, established by Section 29 of Economic Regulation on Transport Act 2020. Point 16, on page 37, from line 45 to 50, to underline subsection 1. Point 17, on page 10. Page 37 from line 52 to 54 to underline subsection 1A. Point number 18 on page 10, A list on page 37. From line 58 to page 38 from line 1 to omit subsection 1, to omit section 1 and substitute the following. The new subsection 1 states is here, section 1 of the Import Company Act 1983 is hereby amended by A, the deletion of the definition of commodity, and subsection D, by the insertion after the definition of commission, to insert the following definition. The word regulator or its following words to be underlined. Regulator means transport economic regulator established by Section 29 of Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. On page 11 of the affidavit A list, point number 19. So on page 11, point number 19, on page 38, from line 19-11, to underline the word. Except in accordance with a price control approved and published in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. Point 20 on page 11, on page 38, from lines 14 to 20, so on the subsection 1 and substitute following the subsection. Subsection 1, if the company has indicated in the business plan contemplation section 7, that it intends to close or terminate in a territory mentioned in section 1A, or to terminate or substantially curtail or eliminate activities which are carried on by the department or any person on behalf of the department immediately prior to the transfer to such aerodrome, the company shall at the same time as it submits such business plans to the Holy Minister, in terms of section 7, submit a copy thereof to the Minister. Point number 21 on page 11, on page 38, in line 21, after minister, to insert the word shall in bold and in square brackets. Point 22, on page 38, in line 22, to omit shall and to substitute shall, move the word shall underlined. Point 23 on page 11, on page 38 from line 28 to which paragraph B and to substitute the following paragraph, paragraph B. Underlying the following was may request advice from Transport Economics Regulator in terms of economic regulation of transport action potential. Underlining stop regarding any action. Underlining again that the minister stop underlining may take in terms of sections 3 or 4. On page 12 of the updated playlist, point number 24. On page 38, from lines 36 to 38, to underline the following words, file a complaint with the Transport Economic Regulator in terms of section 16 of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. Point number 25 on page 38. From lines 42 to 47. On page 38, from lines 42 to 47, to merge section 1 and to substitute the following section. So section 1 states section 1 of the Air Traffic and Navigation Services Company Act 1993 is hereby amended by A, deletion of the definition of commercial, and B, by the insertion after the definition of permission to insert the following definition. Regulator, firstly underlined, regulator means the Transport Economic Regulator established by Section 29 of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. On page 12, point number 26, on page 38, from lines 52 to 54, to underline the following words, except in accordance with price controls approved and published in terms of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. Point 27, on page 39 in line 4, after minister, to insert the word shall in bold in square brackets. Point 28, on page 12, on page 39, bold in line 5, to omit shall and to substitute shall underline. Page 13 of the A-list, point 29, on page 39, from lines 10 to 13, to omit paragraph B and substitute the following paragraph B. We request advice from the regulator regarding any action which he or she will take in terms of substitution 3 or 4. On page 13, point 13, on page 39 from lines 17 to 21, omit subsection 1 and substitute the following subsection. 1, subsection 1, any person who feels aggrieved by the failure of the company to comply with any provision, subsection 5, 2 or 11, 1, may file a complaint with the regulator in terms of section 16 of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020. Point number 31, on page 39, from lines 33 to 35, to omit paragraph A and substitute the following paragraph. Paragraph A is determined by the Transport Economic Regulator in terms of Part A of Chapter 3 of the Economic Regulation of Transport Act 2020, on the recommendation of the agency. Point 32, on page 13, on page 39, from lines 41 to 45, to underline the subsection 5. On page 14 of the updated A-list, in regards to schedule 2. Point 33, on page 41, from lines 55 to 56, to omit the word open inverted commas, comma, except in access excluded by the minister, comma, closing inverted commas. Thank you, Chairperson. Those are the further proposed amendments in the updated playlist. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Harry Chairman. Can we now revert back to the amalgamated versus incorporated? I'm sure you as lawyers should have done your spade work. How do you advise the committee on that one? Mayor Kanjen, can we quickly revert back to you if you are ready?
Thank you, Chairperson. As I said earlier, when we met with the state law advisor yesterday to discuss the change in this particular clause, we looked at the context and we looked at what we sought to achieve here. And it's against that background that we went with the word amalgamated as opposed to the word incorporated. Amalgamated, in this particular context, means the joining of these entities to form a new entity. And this is exactly what is proposed will happen when these entities are joined. I'm not sure whether the state law advisor would like to add anything further pursuant to our meeting yesterday on the word amalgamated. Raksha, do you have anything to add?
I'm in agreement with the parliamentary law advisor. It would be a joining of these entities with the regulator. And it's just to indicate the joining process. Thank you.
Sorry, Raksha, I just want you to be clear. It's the joining of these entities to form a new entity. It's not the joining of this entity with the entity. Right?
Lawyers? Are we done?
Chair, from my side, I am done. We have done searches on legal definitions of amalgamated, and and according to our searches, amalgamated is best suited in our view, in our respectful view, is best suited to this particular context. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Kanjen. Thank you very much. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, can we now, I'm trying to talk legal jargon, can we now try and converge? I think we are being advised that the word amalgamated may actually best suit our situation. May I request that we reconsider our stance and move with the word amalgamated and close this matter? Honorable members.
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much. I do not agree, Chair. If we take the simple example of the CBRTA, the CBRTA is an continue to exist. It will not be amalgamated into this new entity. So it cannot be correct that we are saying that we are going to amalgamate the CBRTA. It's a small function of the CBRTA that we will be amalgamating if we want to use that word. So I don't agree, Chair. I don't agree at all. That's number one. Number two is the issue that was raised by Advocate Almanel earlier on, in explaining that clause that I was asking, and some further discussion and clarify. And lastly, Chair, I think we must put on record, I don't think we have been done a very good service by the state law advisors in this presentation of the A-list. At least I don't think it was satisfactory at all. I don't think the preparation befits the standard that this committee has set and exactly what the importance of this legislation is. Now, Chair, there are a couple of things we have sort of put in here, like the phasing in. It's something that was not there originally. And a couple of other things that one cannot think of at the top of my head. Now, I'm asking, Chair, what would be the process going forward? Because these were incorporated after the public participation process. And therefore, while this piece of legislation is the legislation we do want, but there are things that I think we as a committee rightfully so have put in and they've been incorporated. What impetus or what, how do they then affect the fact that this went on a public participation and we are here now? How do we take it forward? That is an advice seeking. But on the issue of amalgamation, I do not agree, Chair, for the reasons I've said. Thank you.
Honorable Manu, we are bad, I'm Honorable Pete May.
Thank you, Chairperson. I accept the explanation of a legal advisor. I think personally that amalgamate is the correct word. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable May. Baba O Hunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I do not accept the word amalgamation within the purpose of what we want to achieve in the ERT. The purpose of the ERT is not to put together a number of entities from the onset. It is exactly the phased-in approach which would, in a way, disqualify the word amalgamate, simply because you form a legal entity in the form of the ERT, which upon approval then becomes a standalone entity. From that moment on, you will then gradually, over time, incorporate, not amalgamate, other entities into the ERT. In some cases, functions will be taken away from the entity and the entity will remain in existence. In other cases, the whole entity would then become part of the ERT. So amalgamate to me just doesn't work. If it was a matter of all entities or three or four or five entities getting together to then at a certain date cease existence, to then be this new entity, then indeed it would to me be a merger or an amalgamation. But as I see it, particularly since it would be over time and years, as explained and as expressed, incorporate to me is the correct word, legally and in simple layman understanding, it would then be a process of incorporation and not of amalgamation. Chairperson, I am also further in agreement with, you might recall that right at the beginning, I asked you what the process was. Because I also have this concern about the way forward, certainly in support of ERT in principle. It is important that we do that we give the opportunity for input and comment. And Chairperson, especially, you know, on the basis of words and concept, but also in terms of the fact that when initially this bill was gazetted, there was no mention of the phased-in process. This is something which is developed after the publication. So in my view, it's a whole new structure, a whole new form which is being proposed. And I would support Honorable Mangalo on the thinking that it would have to be put subject to input, and this under the umbrella of the National Assembly, in acknowledgement of the fact that it's a Section 76 bill, which means that it should go to the NCOP next. But I think it's important to then also put it on record and to place it on record in terms of input from stakeholders on this. And furthermore, Chairperson, even at this very late stage of nearing the completion of clause by clause on list A, we've got no idea of the financial implications of this, and also not of the HR implications. So I would really suggest that we look at all these matters while we support in principle the ER. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable McDonald, a member of the African National Congress in this portfolio committee. Yes, Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, comrade. Chairperson, I've been covered by Honorable Hansing and Honorable Manu. I just also wanted to just add my voice that amalgamated would definitely, in the instance, this instance, not be the right choice, word choice. And Chairperson, I also want to add to what Honorable Manu said. I'm a bit concerned that the law advisors that's supposed to assist the committee, Chairperson, are ill-prepared today and was ill-prepared last time. And Chairperson, I think I would strongly ask you, Chairperson, to make it harsher for these law advisors to come here and be ill-prepared, because this is the second time that they've been ill-prepared, Chairperson, and it wastes the time and energy of the portfolio committee to sit and listen to things that they were supposed to have be prepared on, and we have to fix and do their work, Chairperson. Thank you.
Hey, let me hear. I can see a barrage of hands on this matter. Honorable Nolichungu, Oboso Yangena, Ake Ubaba, umhlonishwa umabhena umuntu wale kwanyamazana. In that order, please.
Thank you, Chair. I also want to add my voice on the choice of between the two words, that is incorporation and amalgamation. It has been nicely explained by the two colleagues. Secondly, there was a question asked whether this will go to public participation, because there's been a lot of changes. It will be unfair for stakeholders to see so many changes without this bill having gone back for public participation. I therefore support the issue of taking this back for public participation. Thank you, Chair.
Ubaba Mabhena.
Ngithokoze, Chairperson, ngithokoze ithuwe ngilitho namhlanje e-committee. I also want to add my voice, Chairperson, and support what Honorable Mangu is contending and what Honorable Chris Hansinger is contending. I think maybe the state law advisors, maybe they can accommodate what members of the committee feel comfortable with and with the explanation thereof. And I don't think there's any difficulty in them acceding to what the members of the committee are saying. And I think we're united, Chairperson, in this thing. And we're just adding my voices. Well, thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I wish I could see your face. So you are saying you are united on this matter. Me Nolitando, Nolichungu Nontando, can you please lower your hand? I know you are traveling, so you may not be aware that your hand is still up there. Thank you very much. Me Haricheren and Me Kanjen. My little knowledge and everybody in here is that finally the portfolio committee has to agree with the changes of whatever nature. Am I correct?
May
I return?
I'm sorry.
Am I correct? Oh, Mekanjen?
Chairperson, there would have to be agreement amongst the committee on the changes. And if the committee is not in agreement with whatever changes have been proposed, then we would have to go back to the drawing board until there is agreement.
Seemingly on the issue of the usage of the word amalgamated and incorporated, there is a majority view that I've been trying to persuade myself, but seemingly the members of this portfolio committee, with all the reasons, will prefer in their majority the word incorporated. Can we live with that mechanism?
Yes. Yes, Chair, in absolutely, and with all due respect, as the parliamentary legal advisor, I am here to advise from the parliamentary side what I think is best in this particular situation after having joint meetings with the department and with the state law advisor. However, if the members are not in agreement with my advice, the members are at liberty with absolute pleasure and with all due respect, are at liberty to voice their disagreement and to say that they don't agree. And if there's no agreement, then I accept that 100%, and it's for the committee to be happy. We are just here to try and assist.
Thank you very much for understanding.
Okay.
I think let's leave with the word incorporated as the portfolio committee wants. I think on the issue that is being raised here, I should just check and be very clear. The last time we talked about this issue, it is minuted whether this bill has to go for public participation. We had on the issue of the changing of the structure as it was initially suggested, we have a resolution on that matter. Valerie will just remind me. We resolved on that matter that that will not necessitate that we go for public comments. What I want to check now, so that we also close this matter, is that the changes that are made today, except the changes of a comma, because a comma and a full stop will not necessitate this bill to go back to the public. The changes, do we have changes that we will need us to go back and consult with the public Let me hear my advocate, Nell, and all advocates. Let me just get clarity there so that we close this matter properly.
Just from my view, I think the parliamentary legal advisor can give input here. We normally look at whether or not the changes will affect the scope or amend the scope of the bill, but there's a specific reading in the rules. I'm sure Valerie will have that specific rule there when we have to request the National Assembly to make only these additional amendments that were made open for further input. We have done this in other legislation, but that is when there is an amendment that extends beyond the scope of the bill. I think perhaps our amendments, I think the purpose was always there to do a phased-in approach, but based on the amendments that members have suggested, especially that new clause 11 or sub 11 that we looked at, that would then clarify it in the bill and make it a lot more understandable, because that clarity was not there before the committee suggested and requested that amendment from the department in the deliberations. So Chair, that is, I think just from the procedural perspective, Valerie will have to give the procedural advice here. That's not my virtue. And the parliamentary legal advisor could also just indicate whether or not, because the Litmans test is really to look at the scope and whether there's a material amendment. But there's a different process for both of those, Chair, as I understand it.
Okay. Valerie?
Sorry, Chairperson, if I may.
Oh, okay.
Sorry, if I may. May I just ask for 2 minutes? I just wanted to confer with Advocate Nell and Valerie on one point, and I think we need to just speak from one mouth regarding procedure and process. So if you could please just allow me an indulgence of 2 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That 2 minutes mean I can make myself a cup of coffee, Chair?
Maybe let's take 5 minutes and make ourselves a cup of coffee quickly.
In my office in Parliament, it's very nice. I've got a microwave, Chair, thank you.
Hi, Chair.
I know you may not be in your office to make a nice cup of coffee for yourself, Honorable Mapena, but wherever you are, there should be a kettle where you can make a nice cup of coffee. How are you, my friend?
No, Chairman, I think you are leading, so I'm going to subject myself to your leadership. I'll do exactly that.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Nampweto iti our phone will pose I guess corner la sobabini o baba o mapena
what's the thing check it why are you driving me to drink tea? What's going on?
Uma
Mr. Chairperson?
We are here. We have given you your 2 minutes. Are you able to report?
Sorry, Chairperson. Apologies. I think it was the parliamentary law advisor requested 2 minutes, Chairperson.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought it's you. I'm sorry. Me Loshni Ganjan. Ms. Loshni? Okay. Valerie? Valerie, talk to me, please.
Chair, I think Valerie and Ms. Gangingen are just on the phone with each other. That's why she's
okay. Let's do this. I know we sometimes become a very big headache as this committee, and I don't know why, because this thing should be straightforward. Honorable members, can we take the next item? Okay. Mekanja?
Sorry, Chairperson. My apologies. I was on the phone with Valerie.
Okay.
Okay. So, Chairperson, just in terms of process, Valerie will speak to the process going forward. But with regards to my advice regarding the changes, I've looked at the memorandum of the bill, and my concern is that at the time that this went out to public participation, the phased-in approach was not there. The phased-in approach was not clear and only came about as a result of the committee participation. So why doesn't it affect...
Okay, there is a meeting in my meeting and the people are conversing when I'm chairing. I don't think that is a good thing. Let them close their conversation and listen only to one chairperson. Thank you. You can continue, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. So insofar as it does not, the changes, in my view, do not change the scope of the bill. In my view, the changes are material enough to warrant it going for public participation. However, Valerie and I have just spoken, and she's proposed something very pragmatic, and I'm in complete agreement that we go to the public participation only with that which is new, not with everything. So a limited documents with limited changes and limited scope. Valerie will talk with regards to the process and going forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, ma'am. Valerie?
Chair, we normally provide an interim report to the NA when there are amendments beyond the scope of the bill, because the NA's approval is required for that. I just want to confer with my table colleagues in management whether we need to go that route. I think in this instance it will just have to be the approval for the public participation process from the House Chair, and then obviously publishing those clauses that need further input. But I need to just make absolutely sure about the process going forward, whether the committee has to inform the House at least about this change. But at this stage, I would say it won't be necessary.
Okay. Honorable members, can we take it that way? Honorable Chris Wunsinger and Mayor Miriam.
Chairperson, I think we must be very clear on this so that we as a committee do not overstep the anticipation which has been presented to us now. My concern is whether the inclusion of a phased-in approach, whether that is a material change to the bill or not. And we cannot assume
that it isn't a material change. So therefore, Chairperson, I propose that we subject a condition that we say we feel that as a committee, we feel that the changes and the additions and the input of the committee justifies public participation and stakeholder input. And for that purpose, we then suggest publication of the bill in the Gazette, and that we open up the opportunity that it might be found that the phased-in approach is a substantial change and a material change, and therefore would justify the full publication. So from the committee side, Chairperson, I propose whether a portion or whether the whole bill needs to be publicized. In principle, we feel that public participation is needed and that we give a go-ahead for that, but that we do not compromise as a committee and stand to fail on acceptance of the fact that we see the phased-in approach not as substantial and therefore not changing the scope. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Hunsinger. Boramato.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. When listening to the discussions, Chairperson, I think my understanding is that now we are on the A list. It means the bill has gone to all the processes. So now what was left was to take it to the president, and president brought it back with some changes in the clauses. So I'm proposing that, or suggesting that, we don't go to public participation again, because we are on the A list and we have done everything. It's just changes on the clause and also some of the words, the interpretation of the words, like what we're discussing. So I'm saying we must not go to public participation again. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bo Ramada. Okay. Honorable members, I think let's do this. Let's lower our hand a bit. Drink water. We will conclude on this matter before the end of this meeting. Maybe take the next matter so that we cool down a bit on this matter. With you agreeing to that, can we get to the second agenda item? The deliberations on the National Road Traffic Amendment Bill number 7 of the year 2020. The last deliberations, if I remember, we ended up on clause 22. And I can tell you that I'm correct. So we are going to start on clause 23. Hey, come on. Am I right, Advocate Nell?
Yes, Chair, that is correct. I just want to apologize for members. My voice is coming and going because I just returned yesterday from Africa's Strongest in Mossel Bay. So do let me know. I'm going to try my best to speak up. Chair, just before we get to clause 23.
Okay, just before. You returned yesterday from?
It was Africa's Strongest Man and Woman competition. It's an international strongman event, Chairperson.
just remind me to get the results from you right at the end of the meeting. Thank you very much. You can go to the point, your point of before, advocate.
Chair, in the previous meeting...
The point of before.
Okay, Honorable Mang.
Thank you, Chair. Sorry, advocate. The previous deliberations, Chair, and I'm just depositing it, maybe as advocate continues, she might assist us, had areas where there was feedback that would have been given to the committee on certain areas. Now, if we don't start with them, unless advocate has taken note of them and just brings us on board, and we move on and we take minutes quite later on, it might take us backwards and forwards. So I was just saying I would flag that maybe along the way, advocate could just assist us so that we don't find ourselves going back again to clauses that would have been concluded. Thank you, Chairperson, for indulgence on my before.
Thank you. Advocate, can we move?
Yes, Chair, the member was actually speaking to my before. I just wanted to highlight that the clauses 17, 18, 19, and 22 needed some clarity to be provided from the department. This, if members recall, is linked to that additional license provision that the department wanted to bring in. So I'm just going to put clause 17 here. Oh, here we go. The clause 17, there were some points here on the licensing testing centers. That was clause 17. Clause 18, there was questions on the provincial inspectorates. And clause 19, Chair, it was dependent on whether or not there was going to be agreement on the inclusion or what was the need or the practical application of having the provisional driving license, which is what the department proposed to add. So, Chair, those clauses needed some clarity for members. That was in the last meeting, Chair.
Ranzat. Mzatsi.
Honorable Chair.
Oh, Mzatsi. Kuvita anita kere Mzatsi mren. Kapake Mzatsi.
Mutsatsing, Chairperson.
Mutsatsing. Oh, bataki bitse hamnat. Ariye mare le advocate mono. Msolo mule na advocate unsware le. Utamfaworo u. Ku atresa juang. Mariki na kwelo na he. 17, 18, 19.
I advocate the Chairperson. Nigo mutsatsing fair like Mr. John Mutsatsi.
Oh, John Mutsatsi.
Thank you, Chairperson. But before I speak, I'd rather hand over to my superior, Advocate Makatu.
Thanks, John. You can proceed. It's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Ke auto tsa protocol jona monna o tla phila na go tele hare
no thanks Chairperson. Yes, the committee is quite correct with regards to the issues raised in terms of the need for the department with regards to the provincial monitoring or inspectorate as suggested in the bill. And on the department further engaged with provinces with regards to why were they proposing that there should be a need for a provincial inspectorate. And what came out of that discussion, honorable members, was that we at provincial level, sometimes when the provinces go and do their inspections, at nationally, we not on the ground when it comes to the provinces doing those inspections. And what they had proposed as provinces is to say they needed then to have the same kind of teeth to bite with regards to the non-compliance by certain DLTCs and VTSs, to the extent that they are able then to can suspend those DLTCs and VTSs if there is non-compliance, because the provinces currently the process says that the National Inspectorate is the one that are supposed then to take that decision of suspension. So the proposal from the provinces chair and honorable members is that the provinces needed those powers to be able to can then suspend some of these testing stations that do not comply. Thank you, Chairperson. That Chairperson was the need for the provincial inspectorate vis-a-vis the need for why we would have a national inspectorate, and we would also then be having a inspectorate. That's the basis that they require those powers, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. Does that satisfy our questions? Can we move? Baba Lisa Komanu. Chambers, no, Baba Umei.
Thank you. Sorry, Chairperson.
Yes, Honorable Mangu, where are you? Can you hear me? Are you with
I'm here. I thought Honorable May was going. I thought he had already started. I'm here, Chair.
Yeah. I'm ready, Chairperson. Chairperson, I've mentioned it. I've mentioned it about 3-4 times in this portfolio committee. The provincial, they say that the inspectorate, they must have teeth to bite. The inspectorate, the problem at the DLTC in Jabatina, it was closed in February. It's still closed. It's a disgrace. The inspectorate never gave any instructions to close it, but the manager, Mr. Goodman, decided to close it. Nothing was done to solve that problem. It's a disgrace. I reported it to the portfolio committee, the DG, all the people. I can't understand it. It's terrible. No service delivery. It was closed in February. It's still closed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Let me promise you that before the end of this meeting, we shall have ventilated on this matter. I hear your frustration, Honorable May. Remind me if I you see that I'm not raising.
I'll do so. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Babu Manu.
Chair, thank you. Thank you. I don't think that Demota thing there has really responded to what we were raising. There were particular issues. Can a minister appoint an inspectorate where the MEC is reluctant to do that? That was very pointed and specific. There were issues about powers of the shareholders committee that we were not very satisfied with, that it seemed like the shareholders committee authority in certain areas was being removed. And that I've not heard in what John was responding to. So I found him to be like trying to step on ice, you know, not trying to offend anybody or whatever. But I think we were very clear in terms of these issues, and I'd like us to get specific, clear answers. I did not hear him responding to clause 19, and I think I was listening very attentively, which was dealing with, as the summary of Advocate Nell was, the implication or impact of an introduction of a provisional license and so forth, especially in relation to ARTO and others. I missed that one unless you are still going to come back to that one. So Chair, I did not get satisfaction that we are being responded to. Thank you, sir.
John Mutas.
Thanks, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Mani. Let me just respond to the issue of the shareholders' committee.
You may as well respond to the frustrations of the honourable member. Honourable Bidmay.
Okay. Let me just start with the issue of the shareholders committee, because if you look at the current dispensation as it stands now, both in terms of the National Road Traffic Act and the Road Traffic Management Corporation Act, which was then established as the tool that was intended to pull all those powers that are residing at provincial level. As it stands now, currently some of these functions have not yet been transferred to the RTMC. That's why you would find that there's this juncture between what we are proposing in terms of the National Road Traffic Act vis-a-vis what the Road Traffic Management Corporation Act provide for, which was then incorporated insofar as those functions are related in the National Road Traffic Act. The Shareholders Committee is intended or is envisaged to be some form of a governing structure which would then govern all the functions that relate to road traffic management within the country. The Shareholders Committee comprises of all the road or provincial MEC at provincial level, and with the minister as the chairperson of that Shareholders Committee. Now, the problem that we are facing as it stands now is that some of the functions have not yet been transferred, or a decision has not been taken either the MECs and the Shareholders Committee to transfer those functions to the RTMC. So you'd have this problem whereby in what is contained in the National Road Traffic Act, references will be made to a decision that needs to be taken by the Shareholders Committee. But if you look at the transitional provisions, now those functions have not yet been transferred to the Shareholders Committee. Therefore, they are still residing with various MEC. So once the functions have been transferred, and then you would then have the Shareholders Committee being the institution then that manages all the road traffic related functions, not the MEC. So the problem, as outlined by Honorable Magnus, is to say, why does it look like we're taking away some of these functions from the Shareholders Committee? Because, as I said, functions have not yet been transferred. Therefore, that is why it's still residing with the MEC, with the minister being the one that can appoint the inspectorate. And once the transferring of the functions take effect, the Shareholders Committee would be the institution then that takes that particular decision, rather than having the MEC and minister being institution that takes those particular functions or decision on behalf of the Shareholders Committee. So that's the dilemma that we face currently with regards to how the National Road Traffic Act provides for as it stands now, and the incorporation of the shareholders committee within the National Road Traffic Act. I'll pause there and obviously ask the...
You have dealt with the Clause 19 also?
The Clause 19 with regards to provisional driving license. The issue was in the context of whether the provincial driving license, how then as the department are we then going to ensure that or confirm that this person has a provincial driving license, and when are we going to confirm the provincial driving license, and what processes would we then implement in order for us to confirm that this person has indeed pass all the stages that are required for him to be issued with a full driving license, because the intention of a provisional driving license was to say we needed some form of a driving license which would authorize a person to drive a motor vehicle without a licensed driver in that particular motor vehicle. Now, the issue was then, at what point within that particular process would you then say John Mukasa is then authorized to be issued with a full driving license? And the proposal from the department was then, you then needed to have prescribed conditions, which then you would have to prescribe to say, if that particular holder of a provisional driving license hasn't committed some of the offenses or transgression in relation to road traffic, therefore you could then confirm that provisional driving license into a fully fledged driving license. So the issue was that we, as a department, we are trying to inculcate the ethos of compliance to the holder of a driving license not to commit certain road traffic related violation, so that we can try and improve the road safety that we have in our country. But I think I Chairperson, if I haven't responded to all, I think I have my colleague Mr. Mudisani, and maybe also advocate can then amplify with regards to the rationale for us to be having a provisional driving license, and how then are we going to confirm the issuance of a fully fledged driving license in this regard.
Do you want them to come in so that we clarify everything?
Through you, Chairperson, yes.
Thank you very much.
I'm not sure from my colleagues who would then also assist us. I see I have Rob Abramson from KZN. We also have Mr. Mudisani, who can also amplify the concerns raised by the portfolio committee in relation to the provincial inspectorate and a provincial driving license. Through you, Chairperson, I'm not sure from my colleagues who would want to take the part in the...
I have allowed them to come in. Let them come in and explain if they have that capacity. If they keep quiet, I know that the stage is too big for them.
So, Chairperson, maybe before... it's Johannes Makati.
Yes, advocate.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to backtrack a bit and then to amplify what Mr. Motsepe has said. On the issue of the provincial inspectorate, how it happens, Chairperson, is that there would be recommendations that will be made by the inspectors at national or the SABS as our agent. Now, on the strength of that, there would be a need to follow up on the recommendations that the National Inspectorate would have made and advise the MEC accordingly. Now, the establishment of Provincial Inspectorate is meant to respond, to assist in responding to the corrective measures that the National Inspectorate would have made and make it an easier follow-up where you find that a DLTC is found non-compliant on one or two aspects. Say, for example, the marking of the testing area that they've not done that. You find that no follow-ups have been made. So at provincial level, it will make it easier that given the fact that there are these findings that emanated from an inspection that was done, how far are you and how soon can you resolve that? It's just purely that, Chairperson. Now, with regard to the issue of the point made by Honorable Mann on the appointment of the inspectorate the non-appointment by the MEC, as the case may be, whether minister can do that. If you look at the proposal, Chairperson, all it says is that the minister shall, and then it had after the decision has been taken by the shareholders committee, which is in brackets now, which means that it needs to come off, appoint an authority or body of an inspectorate. This is more a devolution of power that giving recognition that MEC is now, with regard to appointment of provincial inspectorate, and this is in 11 capital A, will be given the powers to appoint a person or an organization as a provincial inspectorate to conduct inspections and or evaluations in compliance with the Act as it sits now, Chairperson. With the Chairperson? Okay. With regard to the point on provisional license, the discussion at the time, if I recall, and members, honourable members can correct me, it was around there being an instance where it say a person flies an aeroplane. There are certain times, accumulation of time that this person needs to amass. And the debate was around that whether is this something similar to that we are proposing as the department with regard to provisional license. So I'll leave it to my colleagues to amplify just on that or correct that this might not explain. Thank you, sir.
Rob Abramson.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members. I was asked by Mr. Motsepe to sit in on the meeting as a provincial rep for KZN. I just want to emphasise the importance of the inspectorate option and the appointment of the inspectorates, both for driver's license testing centres, for registering authorities, and for vehicle testing stations. And just to emphasise through you, Chair, that the importance of having the inspectorates appointed within the provinces, because we are close to their operations, and we at the moment don't really have any teeth in terms of being able to monitor and be able to ensure that they comply. So the motion is certainly supported from the provincial perspective. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, okay, can we see Rob Abramson's face, please, Chair?
Mr. Rob Abrams, somebody has a interest of seeing the warm face of you. There it is, Honorable Manu. You may know him from your days when you are with transport. I'm sure that's where the interest is coming from.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Rob, here is your former colleague. Thank you very much. Can we now move, Honorable Manu? Are we happy?
Chair, yes, we may move, Chair. There is a bigger question that I think as a committee we must find time to understand. John Mutating raises the concern of the delay in transferring powers, either to the shareholders committee or from MECs or vice versa. And now we find that they are now doing certain things purely because there is frustration and they want to get the work done. I think it's something that as a committee, we might want to zoom into at some stage to find out what is the issue in transferring these powers in a legislation that was passed by the same government. But in terms of the explanation, Chairperson, thank you so much. I'm fine.
Advocate Almanel, somebody did want to show that, as I remember, that we should start from clause number 23. There were outstanding issues, which I thought you'll know about them. Can we now go to clause 23?
Thank you, Chair. Clause 23, I'm just showing my notes here at the bottom to members. And then I will read the clause.
Maybe let's do so, Advocate, and just really remind members of our principle. As you move, you'll move and move. Where you pause, if members do have anything to say, I'll see them by the raising of hands. If they agree, I will see them by nodding, so that we just pass and save time. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you, Chair. So Chair, just as an indication in my notes that we did send to members, there was no major concern with this clause, and I will read it just now. The amendment to subsection 2 is merely to ensure the reference to licenses still contained in ID documents are linked to the specific section in the Act regarding the continued validity of these types of licenses. And then the amendments to subsection 3 is as a result of the amendments brought in earlier in clause 21F. So Chair, then here at the top, just to read out the clause, this will amend section 16 of the Act, which I have here at the bottom. So Chair, section 16 of the Principal Act is amended, A, by the substitution in subsection 2 for the words following paragraph B of the following words. So Chair, I'm just moving down here so that we can see 2B there. So this is now being added there, substitution. Shall, so Chair sees here, this is the bit that we are changing. This is the bill, shall within a period of 21 days after having so become aware of the disqualification, submit the license or in the case where it is contained in an identity document as contemplated in section 18.6, that document to the chief executive officer. And B, by the substitution for subsection 3 of the following section, so Chair, subsection 3, get substituted by the following one. When a license is submitted in terms of subsection 2,
The chief executive officer shall cancel it, and if the license was issued in a prescribed territory, he or she shall notify the authority which issued it of the cancellation. So, Chair, those are the proposed amendments to Section 16 for members' input and consideration.
Advocate. Continue, Advocate. Members are happy.
Okay, Chair, then going to Clause 24. Just getting this. Clause 24 will amend Section 17. My computer's a little bit faster than me today. So here we see the amendment of Section 17. On my notes, again, no major concerns with the proposed amendments in A, which is this first one here, 24A. However, there were submissions from the driving schools that indicated the application in person would affect some of their business, as representatives sometimes go to make appointments for licensees on their behalf. It's important to note that the requirement to apply in person has been part of the Act long before the amendment bill. If driving license testing centers are allowing other persons to apply as representatives on behalf of licensees, technically that would be in contravention of the Act. Then for B, there is a move from 12-month limitation to the new proposed 24 months. There's also a removal of the reference to the use of unauthorized aids being an offense and linking the finding of this by a court of an offense to the period of disqualification to an outright disqualification following an investigation into the matter. The department must clarify why there's a move away from the official convictions linked to the use of unauthorized aids and must also indicate who will be responsible for the investigation of these incidents and what appeals of such decisions will be open to licensees. So, Chair, then going to the proposed amendment, it's a substitution of subsections 1 and 2 of Section 17. So it will change these two that we have here at the bottom. And then the new clause will read, 1, subject to Section 24, a person desiring to obtain a learner's license shall in person apply, therefore, in the prescribed manner to an appropriately registered and graded driving license testing center. Then 2, upon receipt of, and is removed, the application contemplated in subsection 1, the driving license testing center shall deal with the application in the prescribed manner. So, Chair, those bits that are in bold will be removed from the Act. Then B, by the substitution for subsections 4, 5, and 6 with the following sections, just going down to 4, 5, and 6 for members. There we go. So the new 4, 5, and 6 will be 4A. A person shall not willfully or negligently issue a learner's license, authorize the issuer of a learner's license, endorse or fail to endorse a learner's license, or produce prior print or manufacture any document similar to a learner's license contrary to the provisions of this chapter. Then B, a person shall not make use of any unauthorized aid during a test for a learner's license or be in possession of an aid that may assist a person in answering a test for a learner's license. Then 5, any applicant for a learner's license who makes use of any unauthorized aid during a test for a learner's license or is found in possession of an aid that may assist a person in answering a test for a learner's license shall be disqualified, as may be prescribed, from reapplying for a learner's license for a period not exceeding 24 months from the date of disqualification. And then the new 6, if a person has been found to have contravened subsection 4B, and it is established that such a person has obtained a learner's license during the investigation process in respect of the said contravention, such license shall be invalid. So, Chair, those are the proposed amendments per Clause 24 for members to consider.
Members are happy. Advocate, proceed.
Chair,
thank you. They are happy. Thank you, Honorable Manu. I can see your hand there. Thank you.
Okay, Chair.
Clause 25 now.
Clause 25 will amend Section 18. Section 18 has been amended before, but I'm just going down. There we go. By previous legislation. Section 18 deals with the application for and issue of a driving license. The previous one was dealing with the learner's licenses. So, Chair, I'm just going to mention here, before I read it out, as I link it back to the provisional license, the Bill and the Act make specific reference in sections to how one applies for a learner's license and a driving license. But now when the bill introduces the new provisional license, it does not make a specific or include a specific clause on how this is done, similar to Section 17 and 18 that we have, which the department can possibly just clarify. I don't know if it was something that was just overlooked or if they will put it in regulations, Chair, but I just wanted to point that out before we get to this clause. Then Clause 25, my notes. The amendment under A is not a massive concern. The amendment under B was opposed by the driving schools as this would impact their business. SATSOA indicated in their submission that this issue was fought in the High Court, but they did not indicate the outcome of that court decision. So the department may need to give feedback on this. The department also did not include the feedback to SATSOA submissions in the Annex A presentation. Then the amendment under C is also not of a concern. It merely adds reference to the NATIS or ENATIS officer. Then the amendment under D is similar to that under the learner's license provisions above, the removal of reference to convictions, the disqualification period. So again here, what the department was clarifying is what would constitute an unauthorized aid for purposes of obtaining a driving license. My examples are, would this also include the use of modern vehicles that have pre-programmed hill assist, where you don't necessarily need to use the handbrake, or reverse cameras when they do their parallel parking or other parking methods. We just need to know clarity on what is an authorized aid. And then the amendment under E brings in the provisions as contained in the regulations linked to the time frames within which persons had to obtain card driving licenses. The department must ensure that the reference to Section 18.6 in Clause 23 is correct, considering the proposed amendments contained herein to be affected to Section 18.6 in terms of the bill, especially considering the impact that may result from the new proposed 18.6 capital A. So, Chair, then just reading the clause, the new proposed amendments. Section 18 of the Act is amended, A, by the substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection. Subject to Section 24, the holder of a learner's license issued in terms of Section 17, who desires to obtain a driving license, shall apply in the prescribed manner to an appropriately registered and graded driving license testing center for a license to drive a motor vehicle of a class, the driving of which is authorized by his or her learner's license. Chair, then just to point out again here, there's no mention here of the going from the learners to the provisional, then to the drivers. This clause that's in the bill goes directly from learners to drivers. Then B, by the addition in subsection 2 of the following provision, so there's two at the bottom, provided that in a case where the driving license testing center can provide an appropriate motor vehicle, such motor vehicle may be used for the test. And here, this is the one where the driving schools had concerns that it may affect their livelihoods, as most of the driving school learners make use of the driving school vehicles. Then Chair, under C, by the substitution in subsection 4 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. If an examiner for driving licenses has satisfied himself or herself in terms of subsection 3 that an applicant for a driving license is competent to drive a motor vehicle of the class to which such applicant's application relates, the examiner shall issue or authorize a NATIS officer employed by the driving license testing center concerned to issue a driving license in the prescribed manner to such applicant in respect of that class of motor vehicle, and the examiner or the notice officer shall, and then it adds, points A, B, and C again. Then Chair, here's amendment here by D. By the substitution for subsections 5 capital A and 5 capital B of the following subsections respectively. And just to go here, there's 5A. 5A, the new proposed one. A person shall not make use of an unauthorized A during a driving license test. B, any applicant for a driving license who makes use of any unauthorized aid during a test for a driving license or is found in possession of an aid that may assist a person in passing a driving license test shall be disqualified, as may be prescribed, from reapplying for a driving license for a period not exceeding 24 months from the date of disqualification. In the proposed amendment to 5 capital B, if a person is suspected to have contravened subsection 5 capital A, and it is established that such person has obtained a driving license during the investigation process in respect of the said contravention, such license shall be invalid. Then JE is a substitution for subsection 6. So the new subsection 6 will read, subject to paragraph B, a driving license which has officially been included in an identity document shall not be accepted as proof of a driving license. Then B, despite paragraph A, any person who is in possession of a driving license issued in an identity document was unable to apply before 1 May 2003 for a driving license card issued in terms of this act due to him or her having been admitted to any medical facility or detained in any state institution in terms of an order issued or sentence imposed by a court of law. 2, posted by the government on a foreign mission or assignment or being a spouse or partner who accompanied such a person. 3, employed outside of the borders of the Republic or being a spouse or partner who accompanied such a person. Or 4, a full-time student at a foreign academic institution. Then continues with the removal there of 5, before 1 May 2003, shall, upon proof submitted by any such person or the date of his or her discharge from such facility, release from such institution, or upon his or her return to the Republic, as the case may be allowed to exchange such license within 6 months after the date of such discharge from such facility, release from such institution, or return to the Republic. And then Chair F is the insertion of a new subsection, 6 capital A, a driving license as contemplated in subsection 6A, which was valid before 1 May 2003, shall, subject to subsection 6B, no longer be deemed to be a valid driving license. So Chair, that is clause 25 for members' consideration and input.
Proceed, advocate, to clause number 26. Members are happy. Thanks, Honorable Manu. Clause 26, advocate.
Chair, then moving here, clause 26, amend section 19. Section 19 is the substitution of driving license before certain dates. And Chair, just here from my notes, the insertion by A, the department should clarify whether this authorization or issue is done by only the examiner or whether it's also to be linked to the notice officer, as was done in the other clauses above. The question is whether this amendment also requires a reference to the notice officer, as was done above. Then amendment under B, the department should clarify why they are proposing the additional reference to section 17, the issue of a learner's license. Does this, for example, mean that if a person did not apply for the card license while having a license in their ID book within the specified time period, that the person would have to start afresh as if they never had a license by first applying for the Section 17 learners and then the Section 18 driver license? Chair, then, to just read the clauses for members from the bill. Section 19 of the Act is hereby amended. A, by the insertion after subsection 2 of the following subsection, 2 capital A. Upon receipt of an application under subsection 1, the examiner for driving licenses, if he or she is satisfied that the existing license is a valid driving license and that the applicant is the holder thereof, shall, subject to section 25, issue or authorize the issue of a driving license on the prescribed form and in the prescribed manner in respect of the class of motor vehicle to which the existing license relates. And then B, by the substitution of subsection 4 with the following section, and there's 4 there at the bottom. So the new 4, any person whose license has become invalid in terms of subsection 3 and who requires a driving license must apply anew for the issue of a license in terms of section 17 and 18. So Chair, that is clause 26.
Baba Ulisa Kwamanqi.
Chair, thank you very much. Could I just ask advocate to repeat the last part on clause 26? It's a bit faint here, but there's something of interest to me there. If she could read it or maybe able just to expand that clause 26. Okay, I think I can read. It says after the question that, okay. Is it possible to expand it, advocate, to the one you have highlighted, if possible? Sorry, Chair.
How do you want it expanded when I can read it with my bare eyes?
Chair, it's an issue of which we shouldn't discuss here, our age difference.
Okay.
It says any person whose license has become invalid in terms of subsection 3, I think that is the first clarity. I can't recall what that invalidity in terms of that subsection says. Maybe advocate can cross-reference for me there. And who requires a driving license must apply anew for the issue of a license in terms of section 17 and 18. So my clarity is just to get that subsection 3, that cross-reference, it then leads to the second part of my clarity seeking question. All right, say the driving license which has not been substituted as contemplated in subsection 1 becomes invalid. Now it takes me further back now again to say what is that subsection. Maybe advocate can summarize it for me, because it is those concerns that I have that lead me to the question that says the person must apply anew, because we know the challenges that people are facing even to get licenses now because of corruption and all those things. Now, this subsection 1 and that other one there for me become very important just to have a clear understanding of what we are meaning here. For instance, it says it becomes invalid on the day after the date determined by the minister in terms of section 18, 6 and 7. It's May, which was valid before May, shall subject to subsay have no longer been deemed a driving license. No. The crisis is deepening now, Chairperson.
Don't deepen it. I know you can. Advocate,
what that May 2003 has just deepened the crisis. Maybe let me listen a little bit, Chair.
Yeah, no, let's do that. Advocate,
Chair,
Assist me not to deep in the crisis here.
Yes, Chair, as indicated, this was now just bringing in, there was a declaration by the minister that if you did have your license in your green barcode ID, that you need to apply for a card license before 1 May 2003. If this was not done and you weren't out of the country or in an institution that did not allow you the opportunity to do so, and you're only returning now, then they give you that slight grace period from 6 months from having returned to make sure that you do the application. But Chair, there's further issues at when a driver license will then become invalid. So Chair, there's court orders or where it's found through investigations that the licenses were issued fraudulently. Those are all the different methods or ways for a license to be deemed invalid. Or when, for example, you have restrictions for if you were part or party to a vehicle accident, for example, any other accident that may have led to the need for your vehicle to be modified, and you may have had a license that did not have any restrictions, but now your vehicle has to be adapted, then your license also has to be adapted. So it's linked to all of those aspects. That is that other discussion we had previously on when do you adapt it, how do you adapt it, how do you prove the adaptation, and can you just do it when you go for renewal? Sometimes you can do that if your eyesight has changed or if you had eye surgery, and you don't need to use spectacles or, for example, contact lenses, then your eyesight or spectacle wearing restrictions are changed. But when your vehicle, your type of vehicle that you drive changes, that needs to be an adaptation of your driving license as well. But also linked back to the 1 May time period. So, but I think the department can also give more clarity on the need and the discussion of this. My concern for this clause, Chair, was it speaks of the driving license, and in the past it only had, just want to go here to the clause, it's subsection 4. There was reference only to the driving license if there was issued that you need to reapply. But Chair, this now, the new clause says you must apply in terms of section 17 and 18. So the old provisions allowed you, if there was a concern with the driving license, that you apply anew for the driving license. So they kept the assumption that you still had your learners for that specific class or vehicle. So then you would only reapply in terms of section 18 for your driving license. But this clause creates some uncertainty because now, do they say 17 and 18, which means if for some reason your driving license is now removed or regarded invalid, must you then start from the beginning? Then you'll start with a learner. So then you have to reapply for a learner's license again and do the driving tests. But Chair, I'm going to throw a second spanner in the works because this still does not provide for the provisional license again, which the department has proposed the bill needs to insert. So if your driving license then expires, do you go back all the way to learner's license, and how do you go from your learner's to provisional? Or if in an instance that the committee agrees on including provisional licenses, then what do you do if your provisional license for some reason is lapsed or removed? So I understand why the section 17 also comes in as a concern for the member, because section 17 was never linked to that specific date for the green barcode ID. It was only the driver's license, from what I can recall, Chair. I don't know if my explanation has assisted the member, or if, again, as you pointed out sometimes before, I dug an additional hole, made the swimming pool bigger or something like that, Chair.
No, the swimming pool is now bigger. and I'm disappointed. I thought the swimming pool will be smaller, but it's okay, advocate. It is what it is. Before I go back to Baba Oman, and that advocate Mahatu, Johannes Mahatu.
Chairperson?
Try and make sense and explain this clause.
Chairperson, as explained by Advocate Nell, there was a cutoff period and a gazette that was issued back then that Chairperson will recall or remember that at some stage we used to have driving licenses that were pasted to our IDs. So now that gazette said, made exceptions that look, you have this specified time within which you need to now move to the new driving license card format. And exceptions would be in instances where somebody was in a mental institution or outside of the country, or as it is set out in the Act. And allowance was given that, okay, given the circumstances that you might have found yourself having not complied with the cutoff date, we hereby give you an opportunity to approach your nearest center to change to the new format, your driving license card, Chairperson. So it was simply that. Now, there was a comment which was made, Chairperson, and which I also agree with, that a driving license card, for all intents and purposes, it remains valid up until it is either declared invalid or suspended by a competent court. Now, that's how the Act is configured, and that's what the Act prescribes. On the issue, provisional license, Chairperson, I think if at all the committee feels strongly that there might have been an omission that was made with regard to provisional licenses, given the fact that we are now introducing that. It's a proposal that the committee can make. But then at the time when that provision that we're seeking to amend, we did not have provisional licenses, Chairperson. That would be my submissions in that regard.
Baba Uchambas.
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much. No, I don't think Advocate Nell deepened the crisis, but I think she amplified my concern. Maybe the direct question to the department would be, have there been any people who have come forward to say they could not convert their licenses, which were at the time in one form or the other, in a green-coded ID book? Because at the time, we were also dealing, or the department rather was also dealing with those licenses of the former TBVC states. And would that year and all those things also take into consideration that? That is my assumption. Because this time looks to have been very long for me to us now trying to reopen these particular issues. Now, as it relates to the validity of a license, it's valid until and so forth. Again, I think I thought that legislation would have taken care of that at the time that we were introducing this credit card driving license per se. So I think the issues raised by Advocate Nell, without repeating them, I concur with them. It was my thought process. However, I could maybe not have been able to articulate it in that particular way. So maybe we could have some additional explanation from the department adding what she has said to say, do we have cases where people have come forward to say, I was in jail for this time. I could not have renewed my license. And I don't know what could have prevented them anyway, if they were in jail. If they were in a mental institution, I think there's even more reason not to give them any other license until they go back and do the whole process. So, Chair, I think we need to relook at this proposals here with a fine comb and make sure that we understand what are the implications. I think they are much deeper than what meets the eye. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Advocate Makhatu, do you want to say something?
Thanks, Chairperson. Whether in responding to the question posed by Honorable Manu, whether there's been any person or people who've come forward. I think in the past 2 years or so, Chairperson, if my memory serves me well, there was a gentleman who was, and this amendment is not coming because of that. It's not just one person who made a complaint. But then the long and short of it is there are South Africans who are out there working on, how do they call them? Most of the time, I don't know what that was. It's not me, Chairperson. That it's most of the time they are in the ocean or they are digging for oil and so forth, and their work does not require them to go to their country of birth, and then they left with that kind of a license which was still attached to their green barcoded ID. So there was such a 2 or 3 years ago that was made, Chairperson, that there are others that might have come forth. I'm only alive to this kind of that example that I've given, Chairperson. So yes, they might not be a lot, but then there has been such a complaint that came forth, Chairperson, because others would have reasons outside of what we might have made provision for, and then you would have to consider that or it be looked into. So, you know, where it happens at the coalface of it, it will be at the DLTCs or provincial offices where this kind of issues emanate, and they might find that it's something that they might be regularly dealing with. Thanks, Chairperson.
Honorable members, there it is. We shall have to keep an eye on this. Can we now move to clause number 27? Thank you very much. Thank you, Honorable Manu. Advocate Almanel.
Thank you, Chairperson. Clause 27 amends section 20. Just on my notes, read with the department's acceptance of the proposed amendments made by Ms. Swanepoel, as presented on slide 39 of Annexure A. There's no major issues with this amendment or the proposed accepted formulation per the submission. Chair, I just want to bring up that slide 39. Chair, this is the bill at the top corner here. Section 20 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the insertion after subsection 1 of the following subsection, 1 capital A. The Minister may, by notice in the Gazette, fix a date on which the provisions of subsection 1 shall not be applicable in respect of the driving licenses concerned. Then, Chair, the proposed clause or change by Ms. Swanepoel that the department accepted was that it shall read the provisions of subsection 1 shall not be applicable from a date fixed.
by the minister by notice in the Gazette. See, that was her proposal. The department did accept the proposal, but it's up to the committee whether they prefer that formulation or the formulation as it is in the bill. This is just to show members what those provisions were, that it's reference to some of those older ordinances in terms of which the licenses were issued in the past. So, Chair, that is clause 27 for members.
Advocate, thank you. Honorable Manu.
Thank you, Chair. I see that this provision, could you go up a little bit, advocate, a little bit above the A, which deals with ordinances of the Transvaal? Okay, the holder of a license issued in terms of section of the Road Traffic Ordinance, which license sees to be a valid driver's license in terms of those ordinances. My question is, does this cater for your erstwhile administrations in our reading here? If it doesn't, how does those ones get catered for? Thank you, Chair.
Yes, Honorable Manu, advocate.
Chairperson, I think the department will have to give input on this one, Chair.
Baba u advocate u Johannes Wagamakhatu.
Chairperson, thanks very much. Yes, it should, Chairperson, in responding to the question that Honorable Manu posed.
Yes, it should, Honorable Manu. Are you happy?
No, Chair, it should or it does.
Sorry, Honorable Manu, it does, sorry.
Where? Sorry, Chair, for the dialogue there. In which provision or where does it take care of that?
Advocate? You want to look at where?
The ERT has taken our energy, Chair.
No, Chair, I was waiting for whether you were calling on me or somebody else. But Chair, if we read it, remember, one will stay here. 1A, we're adding after one.
Mm-hmm.
So one is those past administrations or those specific ordinances. I think it's more whether or not this list of ordinances are the only ones that would have been applicable to issuing such licenses, in order mm-hmm. to make sure that all of them were covered. If I understand the member's question correctly. Otherwise, I just need to go up for the member to section 15 to possibly just maybe 15 will assist, because it does say subject to section 15, they can apply for a driving license to be issued in accordance to obviously the class. And then in terms of section 57 of the ordinance concerned, subject to such conditions as may apply to the latter license. So now I don't have section 57 of the ordinances. Chair, I'm assuming it just speaks to those four. I do not have a copy of that section to flag it for members. But if I go up to section 15 of the Act, let's see if section 15 can assist us here. Go section 15. Okay. The section 15 is all the disqualifications from obtaining a driving license. So, Chair, that's the capacity of the vehicles, your age, whether you are a competent driver, whether the courts have determined that you cannot drive, licenses cancelled, medical conditions or disabilities. And remember, some of these sections have been changed in the bill as well. And then so giving the chief executive the power to suspend or disqualify these. So Chief, if you read the bill as including one capital A, it does link to those ordinances. But I'm not sure if the member has other past administrative ordinances in mind other than those four listed there that is currently in the Act. I hope I assisted with that, Chair.
You have an advocate, Honorable Manu. I can see you.
Yes, advocate is correct. My question was exactly linking to say, are these the only four areas that were responsible for issuing licenses in terms of their ordinances? Hence, I was asking how the former administrations, be it the so-called self-governing territories or the so-called independent states at the time. I think they also had some authority to issue licenses. It is in that context, Chair. Thank you.
Can we move, Honorable Advocate, now to clause number 28.
Thank you, Chair.
Close. Chair, sorry, how do we close that matter that I raised there? Sorry, Chair.
As I listen to your matter, Honorable Mani, your question, as you pose it, advocates try to answer it and even went to as far as question section 57, but there is no definite knowledge of whether these were the only ordinances, which I thought does not make a big issue. You want to follow that up?
Chair, yes, through you. Again, if you read it, if you go up a little bit, advocate, I want to read just before subsection A, which deals with Transvaal. It says the holder of a license issued in terms of section 57 of the which license ceased to be a valid driving license in terms of those ordinances. My question, and maybe still an area of discomfort, would be to say, would the licenses of CISGAI, TransGAI, Gazankulu, whatever, Bophuthatswana, how have they been treated? That is all I really wanted. And then not having that direct answer, that is what left my still sense of discomfort. But with the four that are presented there, I don't have an issue at all. The question would be, is that exhaustive or not? And if it is exhaustive, that's where the question was, where is it taken care of? And if it is taken care of somewhere, of course, I'm more than happy to move on, Chair. Because if we don't clear it now, in another amendment at some stage, we might see this thing recurring, but now mentioning these areas, which, if my discomfort is justified, could have been dealt with once and for all, Chair. Thank you.
I see four provinces here. Maybe the question is, are they not including your former homelands? Because number D is the Cape. Can we get that answer so that we move?
Chairperson, is Miss, yes. It's Makhatu, sorry, Chairperson. May I With the permission of the honorable members and the committee at large, that I get confirmation of that. Can I do that? I mean, the question is, does this cover, having listed the four, are the TBV states also included in here? And if so, where is that set out? I think that's the simple question that one can if it's okay with honorable members. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah. No, I think it should be okay. You are reliving the memory of the past. Go back and check. I think that will suffice, Honorable Manu.
Thanks.
Thank you very much. There is a note. Can we now move to clause 28? Advocate Almanel. Lower your hand, Advocate Makhatu. Unless it's a new hand, thank you very much.
No, sorry, Chairperson. It's an old hand, sorry.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 28 is the amendment of Section 23. Section 23 deals with when licenses are not issued in terms of this Act. So when that happens, when will they be deemed a driving license? Chair, just looking at my notes, the members may want to spend some more time on this clause as it relates to the recognition of foreign licenses in South Africa. The department also indicated acceptance of a proposal to link this with the recognition of foreign PDPs as well. The department should also just clarify whether the reference should be only to Section 15, listing reasons for disqualification of being a license holder, or whether this should be to the new proposed Section 15 capital A, which allows for conversions of licenses, or both of those. Then Chair Ms. Swanepoel proposed amendments to this section on slide 40, and it must also be read with this because the department indicated acceptance of that proposal. The include reference to Section 32 in the amendment. This will link the issue of conversion of foreign driving licenses as well as PDPs obtained in foreign countries. Just to give members Ms. Swanepoel's input there on slide 40. So members will see here, I'm just going to put the PowerPoint on the side and then I will read the bill so members can just compare the submission. So the bill, so we have it here, top, right, my right-hand side. Section 23 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsections 1 and 2 of the following subsections, respectively. So 1, here we go, 1 will change as follows. Subject to Section 15, subsection 2, and the prescribed conditions. A license authorizing the driving of a motor vehicle and which was issued in a country that is a contracting state to the convention, together with an international driving permit where applicable. B, a license issued in the prescribed territory. And C, a license with or without an international driving permit, which was issued while the holder thereof was not permanently or ordinarily resident in the Republic, shall in respect of the class of motor vehicle to which that license relates and subject to the conditions thereof be deemed to be a license for the purposes of this chapter. So that will cover all of 1 and then going to 2, the amendment of subsection 2. 2A, the minister shall prescribe the period in which period in respect of which a license referred to in subsection 1 shall be deemed to be a license for the purposes of this chapter, and B, the holder of a license referred to in subsection 1 may, subject to the prescribed conditions, apply for a driving license issued in terms of this Act to take the place of such license. Chair, that is the proposed amendments when we look at the bill at the top, as well as the submissions that we received during the public consultations for members to consider, Chair.
Advocate, members are happy. Oh, there is a hand. Honorable Manu.
Yeah, you see, this clause required us when we've just had the breakfast in the morning. It is very intense. Now, the intensity, Chair, and here I'm just seeking clarity. I'm not suggesting I am not happy. The mention, because here we are dealing with two issues, if I'm correct. We are dealing with a driving license and when it's recognized and when it can be converted, whatever, whatever, which I think is more straightforward. But I think where the complication comes in my view, it's when we then go on and mention a public driving permit, as we call it here, a PRDP. And I think this has been the source of the violence we've seen on the roads by the local truckers, and a recent publication of a gazette by the minister intending to make some amendments. Could we get some explanation on how these two things or three things flow and how these amendments are smoothing that or not dealing with it at all? I hope my seeking clarity question is clear, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Hi, Orlando Ujobe, again, manje na yenang Ujobe, siyambone yangena. Job?
Hi, Chairperson, how are you?
Asenko, nangapagati, asenye Job.
I'm stuck because of low shedding. We don't have network here. Chairperson, first of all, I want to check on the what is this now? There's a sentence that says B, the holder of a license or international driving permit referred to in the subsection 1 may, subject to the prescribed condition, apply for a driving license to take place of such license or permit. I'm trying to check here, Chairperson, are they talking about the international driving permit or they are talking about the local permit? And the other one, Chairperson, is the top one there, but when it says the minister shall prescribe the period in respect of which a license referred to in the subsection 1. I'm trying to check that the minister shall or the minister must prescribe the period. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
What is the difference between shall and must? Both emphasizes that the minister is obliged to do that. Let's hear the lawyers. We have them inside here. Advocate, you want to say something? As you lower your hand, Mondise. Clarity seeking question and the holder of a license or an international driving and shall instead of must. Advocate.
Okay, Chairperson, with regard to the first response, I'll amplify. Can I ask Dr. Mudisani to respond to just that? And I'll amplify that, including what Honorable Manuel said. Dr. Mudisani, with your permission, Chairperson.
Has been eluding us for the longest time. Let me see if instructed, he will be able to come in.
Otherwise, if he's not here, then I can.
Has been called the whole day today. He has never come forward.
Not that fine. Let me not.
Are you here, Mr. Mdisane?
If it's not your person, I can proceed. I'm scrolling through. I don't
know. I was just confirming that he's not in this meeting.
No, thanks, Chairperson. Okay. Chairperson, with regard to the recognition of driving licenses, South Africa is a signatory to the international conventions, and which mutually recognize licenses issued from foreign jurisdictions based on the conventions that we have signed. If I recall, I'm not so sure whether it's a Geneva or Vienna, but it's one of those chapters. Second to that, prescribed territory is defined within the Act, and if you look at the definition, it goes on to list the countries where there is that mutual recognition of driving licenses from foreign jurisdictions. That's why it sometimes happens that when you see a foreign registered vehicle traversing our roads or public roads, you find that person is using that kind of a license issued in those prescribed territories for as long as they are contained within the definition of prescribed territory. Now, with regard to the issuance of a PRDP, how it works is in South Africa, there are categories of PRDP. And I'm not going to bore honorable members with those, but that an articulated truck, which are the ones that we see, which was the source. There's a hand, Chairperson. Maybe let me proceed anyway. Sorry, Chairperson. The PRDP, in terms of our legislation, for one to obtain one, you would need to have gone through a few requirements. Other than one having a driving license, Chairperson, there is this criminal check, there is this medical health check that is done. And when you compare that with other jurisdictions, you find that those kind of processes are not embarked upon. And in fact, so much so that it remains valid ad infinitum, whereas in South Africa, a PRDP is valid for a period of 2 years just to do those kind of checks and all that. So, with that said, that was meant to try to respond to what Honorable Manuel has said. Other than that, if you look at sub two, which reads as follows, Chairperson, that the minister shall prescribe the period in respect of which a license referred to in subsection 1 shall be deemed to be a license for purposes of this act. It is our firm belief that empowers the minister to issue conditions or prescribe conditions within which a particular individual or persons must comply with if they are to be driving an articulated truck in our country. So that's that. And then with regard to what Honorable Ketamabala said, I think his question was, or his clarity that he sought was whether it was local or international. I think that it's quite clear because the Act says that it makes reference to an international driving permit, if I understood him quite well. And the issue of shall and must, as you clarified, Chairperson, to me is one and the same thing. Nothing much said on that. Not certain whether my colleagues who are with me would want to amplify on what I said, Chairperson. Thank you.
Who is Pumelele? The hand is a bit dark, but I notice it now. I would have omitted it. Pumelele.
Any document issued by a competent authority in any prescribed territory and serving the territory at a purpose similar to the rest of the professional driving permit shall subject to the condition thereof and to such condition that may be prescribed be deemed to be a professional driving permit for the purposes of application 1. So in light of the question whether we are speaking to international driving permits or we are only speaking to international driving licenses, I do appreciate that the question is not clear. And I think that will need to be clarified moving forward, especially in light of what section 23 and what has been explained. So this should be a flagged question as Bernard Mann pointed out, that we come back and we can treat when we provide the ALEs or the amendment that the committee is speaking to. Furthermore, Chairperson, I think it must also be noted that in light of the amendment, this section that I've read, 32.3, is not being proposed for any amendment. So the deeming of the foreign territory permit or driving licenses, which is something we may still look into, the deeming provision and the deeming process thereof remain intact, and therefore they create the confusion with what Section 23 is trying to amend and provide. It is actually not clear for myself as well, Chairperson, and that's why I just raised my redacted. Thank you, Chair.
You are putting us in a deep ocean, but it's okay. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm glad we're getting into this deep ocean, because we need to have clarity on this, Chairperson. But notwithstanding that, Chairperson, I just want some clarity on the shall and must, because I think that's very important, because the word use of shall or must, I know in legal fraternity, they prefer to use the word must instead of shall, because of because shall is ambiguous and it's rarely used in legal terms, where must is used, because it explains in one single word what needs to be done. And Chairperson, I think that we need to solve that issue. I think it must be must and not shall or any other thing. When we want to say something that needs to be done legally and legally termed, it must be must. Thank you, Chairperson.
There we are. Mepumelele, if you can lower your hand. It does not trouble me much, but I may forget it and get used to it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Advocate Makhatu.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. In the light of what the parliamentary legal advisor has said, I don't think it will be a skin of our nose to engage more or further on the proposal and the regulation, regulation 116, the insertion that we're proposing to make. And the other input is that this is obviously through your permission, Chairperson, that in the preparation of the A list, we must be in a position to can provide a response to that. Whilst she was making inputs, I directly inboxed her wherein I provided my contact numbers, and I hope that she'll be in a position to share same, and then we can look further into this, given the fact that we've also made a presentation to the select committee, and I was not aware that she's been trying to get hold of us. Thanks, Chairperson. But the rest, we know that, and then, yeah, we can work on that. Thanks, Chairperson.
There is an emphasis on the must, not shall.
Oh, the use of the... Look, like I said, shall and must are by their nature peremptory. So, like I said, if we are to move from shall to must or vice versa, I don't think the essence of what the bill would prescribe will be lost, except when you read further, because, yeah, I mean, this is not part of the amendments that are before. That provision that Honorable McDonald is referring to is an oil and Katamabala is not part of the process that we're proposing amendments. Thank you.
Okay. Okay, can we then leave this on the understanding that we shall get clarity as we move towards the A list? Happy, honorable members. Thank you very much. Advocate Alma Nell, clause 29.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, before you do... Yeah, clause 29, yes.
Yes, Chair. Just to check with Chair, I know we still have to do minutes and get back to some of the points from the ERT, but I think this clause shouldn't be too much of a concern. Clause 29, based on my notes for members there, amendment per A. It's a cosmetic amendment in order to allow the legislation to read better. The amendment at B, although it's welcome that the Chief Executive Officer will now have to receive an affirmation or affidavit to be supplied in support of this license suspension, one has to be cautious of vexatious affidavits being submitted against other drivers. The source of danger... license cancellations or suspensions normally arise from caregivers or children of elderly parents who may regard their charges or parents as dangers due to memory loss or reaction speeds and the like. I added this because I actually worked on a situation or a case like this when I was at Gauteng, because the children of one driver made an application to remove his license because he had contracted dementia or he was about to be diagnosed with such. So that is a point there that you might have. There might be real grounds and then there might be vexatious grounds to do so. So we must make sure that the clauses don't allow for vexatious applications. It's also linked to Section 15, which is the new Section 15 and the amendments that speak to medical findings or other disqualifications. And in some instances, it's also done when you link it with court orders where a person's license is removed from reckless or negligent or dangerous driving. And then the department may also want to indicate here whether the ARTO demerit point system or license suspensions in terms of demerit points accumulated
would also be catered for in terms of the new clause, or whether that would require a later amendment once ARTO is rolled out nationally. Then for the B, there's no major concerns there, and then amendments per C, the department may need to indicate whether the reference there to the section 32 PDP issued in a foreign country should also be included here, as was allowed in the previous section, linking sections 15 and 32, if we accept Ms. Swanepoel's submission for purposes of dealing with foreign issued licenses. So, Chair, I'm just going to move my notes a little bit. Now we get to the proposed new, the amendments to section 25. So, A, by substitution of subsection 1 of the following subsection. If the holder of a learner's or driving license issued in terms of this chapter, a repealed ordinance or any prior law is disqualified in terms of section 15 from holding such license, the chief executive officer shall cancel such license. Or B, of a license referred to in paragraph IA would constitute a source of danger to the public by driving a motor vehicle on a public road, and an affirmation or affidavit in respect of the circumstances relating to such source of danger is submitted to the chief executive officer. The chief executive officer may cancel or suspend such license. Then B, by the substitution of subsection 4, I just want to make sure that subsection 4 is here for members to see. Subsection 4, there we go. So the new 4 will read, if any person, after having been examined and tested in terms of subsection 2, is found not to be competent to drive a motor vehicle of the class for which he or she holds a license, the chief executive officer shall forthwith cancel the license concerned. And then the next one, C, substituting subsection 10. Just to get subsection 10 here, members. There we go. So the new 10 will read, where any circumstance arises in relation to the holder of a license authorizing the driving of a motor vehicle and which is issued in prescribed territory or a country that is a contracting state to the convention, which would have disqualified such person as contemplated in section 15 from obtaining a driving license, or if such holder would constitute a source of danger to the public by driving a motor vehicle on a public road, the chief executive officer may, in writing, inform such person that such license is of no force within the Republic, and as from the date on which such person is so informed, the license shall cease to be in force within the Republic, and the chief executive officer shall retain such license as prescribed. Chair, that is the proposed changes following clause 29 for members' consideration and input.
Honorable Manu.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Advocate. Can we go back to that B, please, on the proposed amendment? I would like to deal with subsection B, Chair, and subsection C. It says, by the substitution for subsection 4.1, if any person, after having been examined and tested in terms of subsection 2A, is found to be competent to drive a motor vehicle of the class provided by him for which he or she holds a license, the chief executive shall forthwith cancel the license consent. But we just said that the person is competent. I don't know if I read it wrong. If any person, after having been examined and tested in terms of subsection that one, or and found not to be competent, what would be the circumstances that would have subjected that particular person to a test in terms of that proposition? That's the first question of clarity I'm seeking, Chair. And secondly, going to the C below there, it says where any circumstance arises in relation to the holder of a license authorizing the driving of a motor vehicle and which is issued in a prescribed territory or a foreign country which would have disqualified such person contemplated in section 15, which we read much earlier, saying what are the disqualification criteria. Danger, it then says further down in the Republic, and from date in which such person is so informed that the license will cease to be in force within the Republic, and he shall, the executive officer shall retain that license. Those two clauses, to me, I don't see them being enforceable, and I don't know what is the reason for them. They've always been there. Those are minor cosmetics, as advocate said. But it raises the question, under what circumstances would these two clauses be effective, or would in any way find a way of enforcing them? Because it's even difficult for section or subsection C to be enforced for somebody who's got a license in South Africa. Now we are talking about a foreign issued driving license. Now the question I'm raising, Chair, are not really related to the wedding, but to the background of this and the enforceability and the circumstances under which these two, as way of examples, could find themselves having to be activated and enforced. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Any response? Quick response? Advocate?
Chairperson, thank you. Okay. Look, here we're looking at instances where if a person were the holder of a license and the holder thereof would constitute a source of danger to the public, right? Or again, in instances where a person, after being examined and tested, they are found not to be competent to drive a motor vehicle of a class in which they would want to hold that license, Chairperson. That's the simple answer. Thank you.
Okay. Honorable Chris Hunsinger. Maybe let's do this. Let's start with this, polish this clause 29 in our next meeting. I can see it's gonna, the cosmetic leads to other things. Can we finish, start with it in our next meeting? Honorable Mangu and Honorable Wunsinger. Honorable Mangu agrees. Honorable Wunsinger.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm in full agreement. And Chairperson, I want to ask you to please excuse me. I've got to join another meeting. If you would be so kind to just excuse me.
I am excusing you, Honorable Hunsinger. Thank you very much.
Honorable, I second the excusing, Chair. Thank you very much.
I forgot to address the conflict of interest earlier on, but we'll get to that. Thank you, Honorable Mangu. Thank you, Chairperson. Long live the Chair.
Okay, let's deal with two issues. I think the first issue I said we'll revisit is an issue of us going back to the taking this bill back to the stakeholders. Let's deal with that issue and finish it. Honorable McDonald.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity. Chairperson, I don't think that the bill needs to go back for another round of public participation, Chairperson, and I move that we move ahead to get this bill on the A-list, Chairperson, to get it. This bill is really important for the economy of South Africa, and I think we've discussed it, and what the amendments we've made is not of such nature that we have to send it for public participation again. Everybody knew from the beginning that all these entities are going to be incorporated. It was just how we're going to do it that we've changed. And I think, Chairperson, I move that that this bill gets fast-tracked, get on the A-list, and that this bill can get published and signed. Thank you, Chairperson.
Mayor Ramada.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I'm raising my hand to second what Honorable MacDonald has said, that the bill must not go back for public participation. Thank you.
Any other hand saying something than what we hearing? Okay, let's close this matter. Valerie Babuketa Mabala?
Chairperson?
Yes.
If I can get some understanding and clarification, why do we want the bill to go back to public participation? Because we have agreed that we are going to deal with that bill. Now, why will whose idea that bill must go back to the people's part?
So you agree that we must continue with the bill. It must not be taken back to public participation. Thank you very much, honorable members. Valerie? The next item on the agenda is the minutes of the
23rd of November.
Yeah, 23rd of November. Honorable members, can we get a mover for the minutes?
Chairperson, Honorable MacDonald, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 25th.
Any seconder?
Chairperson, I second.
At that note, I think let me thank you very much and just indicate who has passed on you or Honorable Pete May. I'm coming to your issue. Thank you very much. Mema Nontando, who has passed on? You're going to a funeral of
my sister-in-law in Butterworth.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair.
Our condolences be with you, and thank you for staying with us the whole time. I was also informed that Honorable Ramadwa is preparing for a funeral. Of whose funeral is it, Honorable Ramadwa?
It's my sister.
Your sister, ne?
Yes.
Not so long ago, you were burying who?
My daughter-in-law.
Wow. I think our condolences as a committee goes to both of you, and thank you very much to both of you for choosing to be with the committee for the duration, and may the Almighty Lord be with you during these trying times. We are with you. Coming back to the last issue, Advocate Makgatho. Advocate Johannes Makgatho.
Sorry, I was talking whilst I'm muted. I'm here, Chairperson.
There's this issue of Eastern Cape where Honorable
May.
Peter May is coming from. I think he has been raising this issue for the ampere time in this committee. May I humbly request the department to look at this issue and give us a feedback in the next meeting?
I certainly will do that, Chairperson. I'll do that.
I will certainly remember that we have that undertaking, and thank you for making that undertaking. Honorable May?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll ask the previous speaker to contact me, and I'll explain to him everything.
I don't know whether will it be prudent, should I, are you at liberty to share your contact details, Honorable Member, or should we go to the chat?
Don't worry, I'll do it. I'll share it, don't worry. I'll contact you.
You have my number?
You have Advocate Mahati's number, Honorable Member.
No, I haven't got his number, he can give it to me.
Yeah, give him your numbers. 072.
Can I do it?
Okay, do it.
These members are out of order, Chair. No.
Yes, they are.
Chair, can I forward the details to Mr. May? I can forward it, Chair.
Mayor Valerie will assist them, Chair. They are out
of order. Thank you, Valerie.
These members.
Thank you very much, Honorable May. In case there is something, you must also get my number. Let's deal with this matter and conclude it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I've got your number.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much to all of you, honorable members. I would persuade all of us to finish this bill with all the challenges that we have. I think we are almost there. But let me thank you for your understanding, and let me also thank the officials from the department. I did not hear an apology of the deputy minister, lest I overlook her presence in this meeting, but if she's not here, it's okay. Thanks to the officials of the portfolio committee. Let's try and coordinate much better. I think this bill is giving us a bit of a headache within and amongst yourselves, those who are dealing with this bill. I implore you to try and assist us to move forward smoothly and safely. With those words, let me bring this meeting to its logical conclusion. Long live everybody.
Thanks, Chairperson.
Thank you.
Long live the chair.
Thank you very much. Long live everybody.